each legs cross towards each other, that's an unequivocal sex invite.
Yours, mine, theirs. Good day, my name is John. Glad to make your acquaintance. If you would be so kind as to give ear, then it is settled. Let us begin the Yours, Mine, and Theirs podcast.
Greetings, fair listener. I am Roy Fillmore, and a few years before, I had been a very pretty boy. But my bloom vanished early, and as even in its height, my podcasting co-host had found little to admire in me, so totally different were my delicate features and mild dark eyes from their own, there could be nothing in them, now that I am faded and fat, to excite their esteem.
Hi there, I'm Mickey, and no amount of persuasion could make me give up my love of bonnets.
And my name is Phil, or it used to be Phil, and then I had to watch these movies and indeed listen to these intros, and then I died, or at least lost all sense of my identity and purpose and personality and sense of self and will to live.
Nice. Oh, good. That's an excellent preview. Yeah.
Phil, how are you holding your fan right now? I'm clutching mine to my chest.
I'm waving for help, desperate for assistance.
On the podcast today, we're talking about Jane Austen films, which is hence the intros. And we didn't really discuss it very much last time, but Phil, as a British man, did you grow up just eschewing Jane Austen completely? Or what's the story there with you?
It'll be interesting to see how I do react. Who knows, maybe I'm playing with you all. But I certainly went in with very low expectations because, I don't know, it just never appealed to me. Like, I like history stuff. I like period pieces. I love love. But somehow the bonnets just never did it for me. And I think maybe because my parents really liked watching them, and you just kind of reject everything your parents really like at a certain age. We'll get into it, but I can't get myself worked up for the kind of the issues and people that are featured. But I'm sure it'll come up.
You know, we have like these culture wars, and so there's like Coke drinkers versus Pepsi drinkers and mods versus rockers, obviously. And in England, is there a culture war between Jane Austen and Bronte sister fans?
You should see them on the beach of Brighton. There's bonnets flying everywhere. Double fisting.
So I think, John, you like the Bronte sisters, and I read Wuthering Heights and I didn't love it, and then I read Jane Eyre and I thought that was pretty good, but I saw a Jane Eyre movie with William Hurt, who passed away this week, by the way.
That's bummer.
And it was okay, but I'm definitely on team Jane Austen, if there is such a culture war here.
I never read Jane Eyre, and I hated Wuthering Heights when I read it in high school, but I kind of loved it when I read it later. I think because, like, when it comes to fictional love, I mean, Jane Austen, I think the appeal to Jane Austen is, oh, this is delightful love that I can have in real life. Mm. But like Bronte love is psychotic and weird and just, and fantastical and otherworldly, you know,
yeah.
like Wuthering Heights, it's like Catherine and Heathcliff, you know, they're out on the moors. Like, the least they did is just have all sorts of sex on the moors. The most they did is like start like this Moorish cult out there. Like, we have no idea what happened. It's just like, it's just a total mood and a total vibe. And like, they're so confident in their psychotic love that, you know, she marries another person and it's like nothing to her because their love transcends everything on this earth. And like, I don't know, that's the kind of stuff I dig.
So it's weird, right? Because as I was reading Jane Eyre, at least like 3/4 of the way through the book, I was still completely convinced there was going to be a real vampire in that book. But I will say, I think you've got a point. Like, the Jane Austen movies have the sweet endings, and it's like if you endure and if you're good, then you get your reward. And with the Bronte books, it's, well, your house is going to burn down and you're going to lose your eyes, but you still get married, but it's probably pretty crappy.
You know, it's too bad we can't do the same thing with Bronte movies because, I mean, there are really only two.
I think Phil would come back for that.
I'm willing to add on.
I want to get back to you, Phil, just a little bit, because, I mean, in the United States, it's, I think it's a little, like, you know, Roy is a big fan of Jane Austen. I think it's slightly cool to be a fan of Jane Austen. You know, I mean, most guys don't really know. It's not like a thing, but I feel like you're, like, growing up in Britain, you have to make a choice. It's like Twilight or something. You have to love it or hate it.
Yeah, well, I guess I was mildly surprised that you guys were so into it, because, you know, you're sort of viewing me from your perspective as an English guy brought up with this, and I'm thinking, what are these two guys from Utah? How did they come across this and grow to love it? Is it because it portrays a certain kind of Englishness?
So can I tell you?
I don't know.
I think there's a couple things. So first of all, I'd never read any Jane Austen. My wife really liked Pride and Prejudice, and we had the book. And actually, her mother bought me like a complete selection of Jane Austen books, right? A collection. And I think it was while watching the Meg Ryan, Tom Hanks movie, You've Got Mail, where she's discussing how much he loves Pride and Prejudice and he hates it. And he's trying to read and he can't get through it. And I think I just thought that I remembered having a college professor who gave us a 2-hour lecture on just Jane Austen and how she wrote women. And I thought, okay, fine, I'll read Pride and Prejudice. And if I'm being honest, I read that book in a day. Like, I couldn't put it down, and it felt super. It was. I don't know how to explain it. Similar to Twilight. Like, I agree. I understand Twilight is really stupid, but also I couldn't stop reading that book. So I don't know. Is Twilight just modern Jane Austen? I hope not. But I think also because we're crazy Utah Mormons, there is a lot of stock put into
bring that up.
Finding your happily ever after with your Darcy. In fact, one of the movies we almost watched is called, is it just called Pride and Prejudice, John? But it's the Mormon version. It's the BYU students version.
There's a BYU version of Pride and Prejudice. And also,
I'm so glad we didn't watch it.
We almost watched is a movie called Austenland. Mm. Which is it's made by like kind of a famous Utah writer.
Is that Jerusha?
You know, also, I mean, Jerusha Hess. Which, okay, yeah. You guys, just for your information, over in England over there, Napoleon Dynamite, the guy who made Napoleon Dynamite, the woman who made Austenland is that guy's wife. And so it's like, you know, kind of this weird local dynasty of writers and filmmakers. And but it kind of it really makes sense that Austenland exists, because I think culturally, you know, we live in a culture of marriage in our part of the world. And it's a culture of marriage that's very, very similar to Jane Austen, because it's culture. It's obsessed with marriage, but it's also obsessed with like chastity.
Yeah.
So it's a
race. It's a race to getting married and keeping your chastity, right?
The women we grew up with, it's not uncommon for them, you know, for their mothers to bring them into Jane Austen, and to kind of like. And I think just because we sort of live the same life. And so
yeah.
And I think that's why we're exposed to it anyway.
Much like Anne Elliot, if you're a Mormon in Utah and you're 27 years old, then, you know, most hope is mostly gone. So
you're a spinster.
You're a spinster, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there is a joke, you know, it's like, I'm 27 years old. And that's like really funny to look to you know, see in 21st century eyes. I'm like, 27, that's nothing, right? That's nothing.
Well, interestingly, all the people in these films are supposed to be like 16, played by 27-year-olds.
So I will say, it's weird that we even did this podcast, because Jane Austen movies, this was the third time it was up, and it just never got any traction at all, and this time it just ran away with the vote. And I don't know how to explain that. I was expecting it to go into the Three Strikes You're Out club. But here
we are. That's my luck. It's the universe hates me.
Well, to be honest, and I'm so sorry how stereotypical this is, but when I knew you guys were coming on, I thought, how perfect would it be if this is what we ended up with? And so I nominated it, but I didn't think it would win. And then I don't think the poll was even close, because it wasn't even close. So anyway,
I think
here we are.
Factored in, I mean, I think people really appreciate what you say when you say, okay, we're voting now, and by the way, there are going to be a couple of British people on here, so vote for Jane Austen. I think people actually listen to that.
I did lobby. I campaigned a little bit.
Sorry, not British. What?
British Empire? I don't know, whatever. So
when I really want to annoy Mickey, I refer to her as my English Rose.
So... Anyway, but it's interesting, though, because we ended up with three movies. By the way, we're talking about Clueless, Mansfield Park, and Persuasion. Mansfield Park is the 1999 Frances O'Connor version, right? And Persuasion is the Sally Hawkins 2007 version. But I think it's interesting because Clueless is obvious, like the not, it's like the funny adaptation, right? Where it only resembles Emma if you're pretty familiar with Emma. And then Mansfield Park is kind of the modern, sharp, clean looking version. And then Persuasion is just like a straight up BBC Bonnet, Saturday evening special, right? So I think we got a good variety.
Yeah. And just to be clear, the Clueless we're doing is the 95 Clueless with Alicia Silverstone.
Yes.
Yes.
We've had this discussion before. Like, she was a meteor, and then she disappeared.
Yeah.
I thought that she was going to rule the movie theater for years, and she had, like, two or three hot years, and it was over.
I don't know the story. I think there might be a story there. I mean, it could be one of two things. It could be, you know, I feel like she wasn't, like, shunned by Hollywood. So, I mean, it might be that she, you know, did the mother thing. That's not... Mm. I don't know. I can kind of see that.
Really selfish of Hollywood women to give up acting and have children, especially when we're enjoying their films.
We are enjoying their films. Before we go too much further, Mickey, I gotta ask. I want the Australian perspective. What is your like Jane Austen's story is, you know, is it kind of like a girly thing or a cultural thing at all? Or is it something you came into later? Or do you not care as much as maybe we think you do?
Right. Cause you'd think I'm going to answer for Mickey now. Cause I'm that kind of guy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to answer for her, but I'm intrigued because you think it would go against that kind of Aussie rugged, no nonsense, no frills, no frilly shirts, no bonnets kind of attitude. It's all a bit proper, isn't it, which you kind of rail against normally.
But in some respects, we are very traditional. And
that's true.
Australians,
you get very married,
have
very young,
a love of old things. So, you know, anything that's 18th or 19th century is properly old. And, you know, that's, I think, I certainly grew up reading Jane Austen from a very young age, and so have always loved it. And similarly, Pride and Prejudice was one of those books that I just couldn't put down. So I think I'm not an individual in that. I think Jane Austen is loved fairly universally.
I feel dumb because I couldn't even get through 10 pages of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Is that because the zombies didn't come until page 11?
That might be it. So Pride and Prejudice is your favorite?
I do love the story of Persuasion. I think you know, we can talk about it a bit more. I think Persuasion is a really nice sort of grown up, mature story. But yeah, Pride and Prejudice is just so cleverly done. It's hard to, hard to think of a better one.
So I'm just dying here. So book wise, I think I like Pride and Prejudice the most, and I really love Persuasion. I love it to death. But I think Elizabeth Bennet's just a stronger character. Movie wise, I probably my favorite movie is probably Sense and Sensibility, which I think is really well done.
Oh, anyway. I think you've mentioned that before. Yeah.
We've seen it before.
Which we have seen. We've talked about it on this podcast randomly. I can't even remember. It was in. It was because "and" was in the title. That's why
and
we watched
movies with "and" in the title.
Nice.
So that's been covered. Nice. Okay. Well, anyway, I suppose we can get into the three movies. We're going to start with the one that kind of doesn't belong, but kind of mostly belongs, I guess.
Okay, this is fascinating to me. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I think John is the only one here that has no frame of reference because he hasn't read Emma. But maybe Phil as well has no idea what the story of Emma is.
I haven't read Emma, but I have read up on Emma. I knew a bit about the story before, and I've done my revision today because I'm a thorough professional.
Okay.
I have no frame of reference, but I have seen Clueless many times. I mean, isn't that kind of having a frame of reference? Like, what's different about Clueless? I mean, okay, maybe we should start there.
We'll get there.
But I look forward to the big report. All I know is I never have to watch Emma or read Emma because I've seen Clueless several times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, take it away, Mickey.
Shall I go?
Yeah.
Okay, so Clueless. We open with Cher, also known as Emma, who is a beautiful, spoilt young lady who wants for nothing. She lives with her doting dad and also gets lots of visits from her ex-stepbrother, no blood relation, Josh, also known as Mr. Knightley. whom she tolerates, fresh from the success of matchmaking two of her teachers, also known as Miss Taylor and Mr. Weston, Cher decides to take on a new project, which is to make the new girl who arrives, called Ty, also known as Harriet, and turn her into an attractive young thing that everyone wants to be with. Despite the fact that Ty is instantly attracted to someone who seems to be more her kind of guy, Travis, also known as Robert.
Robert. Okay, never mind.
Robert Martin.
Robert Martin, yep.
Cher tries to match Ty with a chap called Elton, also known as Mr. Elton, who it turns out actually fancies Cher and not Ty. And after some misunderstandings, Mr. Elton throws himself onto Cher and is rejected, and Ty is heartbroken. But so
that scene in the car where he like tries to, you know, do his thing with Cher, right? That's actually really, really faithful to the book, because I think it's in a carriage ride where Mr. Elton throws himself on Emma, right?
Oh.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because that actually, for a comedy, that does seem like dark. A little bit, yeah, it's like, oh, they're going there. This is really crazy what's happening. Does she also get mugged in Emma?
No.
Yeah, man. Okay.
So Ty finds out about this and is heartbroken, but then swiftly moves on to Josh. At around the same time, a new guy arrives in town called Christian, also known as Frank C, and Cher very quickly falls for him. Josh seems to disapprove of this relationship, however, and it turns out that Christian is actually a friend of Dorothy. Gradually, Ty becomes popular, and the tables turn on Cher. She fails a driving test, and then Ty announces that she's in love with Josh, which really upsets Cher. Ty and Cher have a big falling out over this, and then Cher comes to an epiphany and realizes that she loves Josh, and that's why she was so upset with Ty. And she decides to turn her life around, makes up with Ty, realizes just how right Travis was for Ty, encourages them to get together. And then, hooray, it dawns on Josh that he loves Cher too. Cue happy ending for all. And the cherry on top is that Dad gets to keep both of them.
Yeah, yay. That's... I will get to that weird relationship. There are two weird relationships that I'm going to get more to, but I'm going to start with this one. Okay, what is Josh's reputation at college now when everybody finds out that he's dating his 15-year-old stepsister?
We were trying to work out how old he was, because he seemed to have a glass of fizzy wine at the wedding.
But then he says he's a freshman, and we don't really understand the years, how they work there. A freshman,
so he would be 18.
Would be 18 or 19.
Yeah. 18
so he's like maybe
19.
3 years older.
Yeah.
drinking fizzy wine illegally then?
Oh boy.
Oh yeah. That doesn't usually happen in American colleges.
That's what
colleges.
Got this movie's PG-13 rating. Yeah.
No, it could be. Sure.
It might be. And also, to be fair, Josh could be like 16. Like, he could be. Our friend Ammon, who's been on this podcast, like, he was, like, when he was, was it?
A freshman in college.
Yeah, when he was a freshman in college, when he lived with Roy and I, he was 16 years old just because he, you know, wanted to go to college early. And that's possible. But I don't know. There's no evidence of that. I think Josh should be about 19 years old.
Yeah, probably.
Mm. Yeah.
So this movie's fascinating. I've never seen it before. And all the things I read online was loosely based on Emma. But this is really faithfully based on Emma.
Mm.
Like, as far as the main relationships
It's keeping go, it real. It's keeping it, keeps it, real. It real. Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
This is missing a kind of the big, big moment that happens in Emma. It's completely gone from this. Not gone. I guess they shifted to another character. But in Emma, there's a moment where Emma says something really stupid and hurtful to one of her friends. And, yeah. and Mr. Knightley completely dresses her down. And in Clueless, she doesn't say anything stupid. She just makes a mistake on legal documents. And I guess her dad's. What would you call him? Paralegal yells at her. But I mean, that's not a moment where she decides to change her life, right?
Yeah, I didn't see that as that moment because I was wondering where that was as well. Yeah.
Well, what's wrong with Emma's life, though? I mean, okay, yeah, I'm talking about Emma, not Cher. Is it just because like her heart isn't pure in what she's doing? She's like. She's being a little too impish in controlling in other people's lives. Is that her problem?
If I'm being honest, she's one of my least favorite Jane Austen characters. Mm. She's pretty selfish. She's super privileged. And she kind of goes through life. And I mean, she's sweet. She means well, right? But she's young and she's immature anyway. But the point is like she makes a slight adjustment in how she treats other people, and then she's immediately rewarded with the love of her life, and she gets married, right? So
yeah, I agree.
I mean,
she's really very nice.
Yeah.
Well, opportunities for me to talk enthusiastically are going to be thin on the ground here, so let's talk about Emma / Cher. And like I said, I haven't read Emma, but I've read up on it, and I'm not saying I like her, but I think she's a very interesting character because I get the impression that you're not alone, Roy, and that most people dislike the character of Emma.
I don't even dislike her. I just think that she's not a particularly strong character. I mean, right. I don't blame her for anything. I mean, she's young and she's immature and she acts like it.
I dislike her.
Okay.
So what I was going to say, I believe Jane Austen described her at the time as a heroine that no one but me will like.
Oh.
Which is kind of interesting. I can see all the faults of her. You know, she can be very insensitive and manipulative, and even well, no, I won't say cruel. She can be thoughtless and manipulative and superficial. But a lot of it comes from a basically decent place.
Yeah,
she is just trying to make people happy. She is not stupid. This is something I think, again, is true of the book, and I think they make a bit of an effort here to show that she's not an airhead by any stretch of the imagination. She's if she applied herself more in school, she could be doing very well. And she, you know, corrects what's-her-face on the Hamlet quote and all that malarkey. So she's not one-dimensional, and I kind of like the fact that you don't know whether to be irritated by her or to see her as someone who's just kind of trying their best. She's a flawed person the way we're all flawed.
Right. I like how she's both. The thing I really like about Cher is she is annoying because she does some very selfish things. She gets the two teachers together just to get her grades better. And just to become like more popular at school. Like everybody likes her at school. Like she gets this round of applause from everybody who like gets these teachers off her back. But also just in her like interpersonal relationships, like she could be snobby and she could be rude and she's not kind of where it counts, you know. Yeah. Like, you know, you think of a couple of examples, like she badmouths Travis early in the movie, but then later in the movie You know, like, you know, he brings the bong to the this whole beach, like, thing, you know, and he's like, oh, she's like, oh, thank you so much. You know, this, and, you know, she's just so kind and sweet and nice to him, even though, you know, he is like, she did label him as like a stoner, but she is very cordial and nice and sweet to him. And at the same time, like, she was very embarrassed by Christian, and he could have been like, he kind of, Christian kind of made a fool of her, and she could have been really like embarrassed and frustrated and put off by him. But, you know, after, you know, she discovers, you know, that he's gay or whatever, they kind of become best friends.
Yeah.
And it's no big deal, you know.
And she's socially in that high school in a position to kind of destroy Christian, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even though it's the 90s and it's California, I think it's still probably pretty tough to be gay in high school in the United States. Ooh. And so, but I love that. I love that I figured out he was gay at the dance where he kept like hanging out with the other guys, but then he brought over they had a Tony Curtis movie festival. They're watching Sporadicus together. Yeah.
Sporadicus. And yeah, there's no, I mean, she doesn't know who Billie Holiday is. How is she even going to know? How is she going to know the coding for Tony Curtis?
Oh, man.
It's interesting, though, that Christian was the Frank Churchill character.
Yeah.
And actually, Frank Churchill did turn out to be a bit of a villain.
No, he was. And it's interesting because I didn't like Christian until I figured out he was gay. And then I thought he was lovely. Because he wasn't like being like leading her on, and he wasn't like doing what the Frank Churchill character does, right? He's just trying to get through high school. It's
kind of funny. I feel like, you know, I've always liked Christian as a character, and not in the most enlightened way. I mean, because a lot of times I watch these high school movies and I like put myself there, and I don't like Christian at the beginning because I'm like, oh, he's a pretty boy, and you know, Cher likes him, and so I dislike him. Like, that's why I don't like Christian. And so, like, I feel like, you know, and this is just me just being really insensitive and lame and not cool at all. Like, once I realized the threat of Christian is gone, I'm a big fan of him.
So he has a quote where he says, "Dig this, they're charging for brewskis." And when he said that, I was like, oh my gosh, I couldn't hate Christian more, right? But he's got a great car, and I think I actually love his wardrobe. And like, when she opens the door for him, and he just like walks right in. His entrance is great. He's got some pretty good confidence, so.
I do love the line where the dad asks him if he drinks. No, I'm good.
Yeah, no, that's good. Okay, that's funny. But,
my last word on Emma, though, Emma Chair, is, and whether we like her or not, is the line about the skis, I think, is what sums her up. So I don't know exactly what the nature of the disaster is that they're getting relief for, but the skis are going to be inappropriate, whatever it is. And so it's a funny line, but I think that is her, because the word, and I thought this line in my head, and then I realized it was the title of the film, and I went like, whoa, the worst you can say about her is that she's clueless.
Yeah.
She's not nasty. She's not evil. She can be a bit selfish, but it's never from a place of ill intent. She's just clueless. She's trying to do the right thing. And sometimes that means doing something that's insensitive or facile or, you know, thoughtless.
There's nothing mean about her at all, right?
No,
and that, so I was quite, I think, charmed, that's by the difference between her and Emma,
right? Yeah, because
I think Emma actually can be quite mean.
That was the impression I got from what I heard. Yeah,
wasn't always nice.
This is the most interesting thing because, you know, I mean, people make remakes and they make modern remakes all the time, and a lot of people will probably disagree with this assessment of it. But I think the best thing we can say about Clueless is it took a classic piece of work and arguably improved on the weakest element of that, because people don't actually like the character of Emma.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's fascinating. So also, like, I mean, this movie is like a 90s icon, right? And it's crazy that I haven't seen it until now.
Likewise, also, man. Likewise, I never saw it, and I love the 90s. You know, it's my time, and I couldn't believe I hadn't seen it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I saw it in the 90s.
Wow. So I was talking to my wife about this, and there were a whole lot of bad Transformers movies in the last decade or so. The most tolerable one of them was Bumblebee, And it was set in the 80s, but what really bothered me about that movie is every 30 seconds they had to remind you that it was set in the 80s. And that's exactly how this film felt for the 90s, but it's not manufactured, right? It's just really a product of its time, and it's exactly 95. What it is. And it just,
that's great. Yeah.
I think in a lot of ways, Clueless, like when we think of the 90s, it's not because like Clueless was replicating the 90s. I think the 90s kind of replicated Clueless. Yeah, it was
that's
like
true.
You know, 1995, and yeah, and I think
thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, and everybody saw it except for you two, apparently. Yeah. and so you know, our I think our lives were kind of shaped by it just a little bit. You know, a lot of the phrases we used, I mean, people were using them in the 90s, but I think it was a lot. You know, the masses were using them because it's like, hey, you know what? We all went and saw Clueless, and we were all kind of delighted by it. And there's like the story spoke to us in some way.
Well, that explains, John, your our senior year of high school, your yellow plaid fad. Or
yeah,
phase.
I know. Yeah. It was
that might be appearing in my awards.
Yeah, I kept getting sent to the principal. It's like it was so short. It was so short. Principal did not like it. Yeah.
So for Christmas this very last year, my 15-year-old daughter asked for a Cher's yellow plaid outfit and we got it, and she hasn't worn it even once, so I don't know what the deal is.
Oh, that's not
fair. Oh, yeah. Send it my way.
I will. I mean, you've lost the requisite weight over the last 24 hours, so you're probably good.
Yeah, maybe. okay, let's see. Clueless. I don't know what else to say.
Well, Sean Wallace, that's a pretty fun guest. He's one of the two teachers at the beginning, right?
You mean Wallace Shawn?
Wallace Shawn, yeah. Also, I have a comment here that says, I love Murray. I don't even remember who Murray is anymore.
Murray is Turk, yeah.
Oh, yeah, from Scrubs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the one, there are a couple things I like about him. I don't like how he always calls Dion woman, and she says, don't call me that, I don't like that. And he gives her some intellectual excuse to like call her woman. And I'm like,
and this is bitches later.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't care what reasoning you have, you know, and what, you know, thesis you have for calling her woman. It's, I mean, she kind of asked you not to do it, and that's annoying. But then it was pointed out to me on another podcast. It's when Cher says she likes Christian and he just laughs about it. He says like all of these things, like kind of all these gay stereotypes, but he doesn't say anything disparaging about like homosexuality or Christian in general. Mm-hmm. He just kind of he said like when he says ah ha ha he's a friend of Dorothy, he's not saying that like he's not using like the F word slur or anything.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's just like he's just kind of he's laughing at the situation. You would think, you know, the guy who calls his woman all the time would also kind of be homophobic as well, but he's just totally not that way. Yeah.
Yeah. On its own, though, if we sort of ignore the Austin for just 1 minute,
sure.
On its own, just as a film, I just thought it was really good.
It was really fun, wasn't it?
It's a great 90s
ratio. High
school
is great. Yeah, exactly.
So many classic lines.
Yeah.
So many. Like old people can be so cute.
Yeah.
when the dad says, I got a 45 and a shovel. That's probably my favorite line.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons I didn't watch it when I was that age was I probably had the impression that I was 15 at the time. I probably had the impression that it was an Airhead comedy, that it was kind of just a celebration of a vapid consumerist culture.
But you probably would have thought that. At the time.
Yes, what I'm saying.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I think you would have felt that way.
Oh, even if I'd seen it. Yeah, oh, maybe.
It in 95, you would have been like,
possibly.
why am I watching this film?
But it is, you know, it manages to undercut that just enough.
I kind of thought that. I think I did think that a little bit. Because I remember everybody talking about how smart it was. And I saw it, and I think I was dumb enough to think that everybody was just saying that to be smart. And I was just... I was just too dumb to kind of not get, you know, that, okay, yeah, she does talk dumb, But I think the movie does a really good, you know, because especially at that time, you know, when I was like this mopey teenager, I kind of was under the impression that you couldn't be smart unless you were also depressed. And you know, the movie kind of, it shows you that, hey, you can be really smart like Cher. And you know what? She's not universally smart. Like, she knows specific things, and she has a good vocabulary, and she knows Mel Gibson films. And so she can out quote Hamlet, or like, you know, a freshman lady's Hamlet, you know, just fine. And
Barry wearing freshman lady.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they were so freshmen. It's kind of funny, you know. You see Paul Rudd and the freshman lady, and it's like, oh yeah, they kind of seem younger than a high school crowd because, you know, we thought we were so old as freshmen, but we were just being such freshmen. But I mean, I guess, you know, the point is, Cher is smart, but she's not, you know, in the way that I think people are smart in just knowing facts, but. It's like she was socially not as smart as she could have been. She's smart, but she has the room for growth in different areas.
Mm.
Well, she's quick on her feet, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah.
And so she has that. So
the lawyer blood.
It's interesting. Yeah. Thinking about why Phil maybe didn't watch this. So in 1995, I didn't see this movie, but I did see in the theater five times the movie Crow, which is maybe why I didn't see this movie. So.
That's
I don't know, but anyway, it was delightful. So in a few weeks, we're watching 90s high school movies in a few weeks, probably, maybe. Spoiler. So, and we're not going to watch this, which actually makes me happy. I'm glad we watched it now, and there's room for other great 90s flicks.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I saw a lot of similarities in Thai with myself when I first came to the UK.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
It's interesting, because
all the drugs?
Yeah, possibly. Yes. I suppose, how can I say this? I was probably a little bit precocious. So I was 16 as well. And
yeah,
I arrived
so
in the UK to a completely new place, went into a, you know, brand new high school environment. Because, you know, I went to a hippie school in Australia. And in England, there weren't any hippie schools for me to go to. So I went to the local... what would you call
Sheffield
it?
Sheffield
Comprehensive. So that would be a state school in Australia, which is, you know, a government school. I think I actually did ask that question, which I think she asked a little bit too soon. I mean, I'm not sure I'd ask that as the second
You got coke here?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Those lines. Or, hi, I'm Thai, have you got any dope?
Oh yeah, herbal refreshment.
I felt very similar, and the whole you know, the party scene when there's people vomiting in the pool and that kind of thing.
That was my favorite parties. I didn't write that down as any of my words, but I love that's one of my favorite parts of Clueless, is the guy vomiting in the pool and his girlfriend patting him on the back, like she led him to the pool, she's like, oh, a body of water, vomit into this. She like it. I feel like she led him there, like this would be the safest
like
place to vomit. But it's like the worst place anyone could vomit that you lead a guy to is the swimming pool. Like anywhere else, like the chair, the deck, in a toilet, on the fence, on a table, in the bushes, anywhere. But like the entire pool is gross now because that guy threw up in it.
Yeah.
So we a few years ago, my wife bought this $500 rug, and we were just sitting there watching TV, and my daughter vomited all over the rug. And then we gave her this bowl, said, if you're still sick, you know, throw up into the bowl. And then we'd clean the rug, and she pushed the bowl aside and vomited all over the rug.
Sometimes there's just no control, though, is there?
No.
She really hated that rug.
She
that
hated
was her
well,
way of saying it. Yeah.
Can we be honest? I really hated that rug. It was like this red shag carpet deal. It was weird.
Yeah.
So anyway, no, Clueless. I thought it was delightful.
Yep. Loved it.
May I also just highlight one other thing?
Please.
Was the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones.
Oh, okay.
Well, the soundtrack is amazing.
The soundtrack's phenomenal.
The soundtrack is amazing, but Mighty Mighty Boss Tones I did see live in the 90s.
Oh.
in England. And they were incredible. And I met the lead singer, who was very charismatic.
What did you tell him?
Hello. Where's this going?
You told him, you guys are peers, because you told him about that music video you were in.
I didn't know. No. But I think I did gush something like, "You guys were amazing. We didn't come here to see you, but it was just incredible."
Nice.
I know. It was one of those unexpected gigs where you go, you don't really know who's playing, but then they turn out to be absolutely amazing. Mm. And they were one of them. And nice. he took my hand and he kissed it. And he said, "You're gorgeous."
Well,
and gave
me, goodness, are you guys married?
Well, yeah.
You're Austin married.
Gave me a tape.
Oh, a tape.
Like a Mighty Mighty Boss Stones tape.
Wow.
A
cassette
tape. Like he made you a mixtape.
He made me a ready-made mixtape.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So there's my Mighty Mighty Boss Stones story.
One interesting thing is I used to really like... Well, I guess I wasn't a Mighty Mighty Boss Stones fan, but I used to love Someday, I Suppose, the song that's in this movie. And it always really threw me because in America, anyway, I don't know how it is over there. In America, their big, big hit that is always played and that everybody knows is a song called Knock on Wood, which...
Yeah, boy.
I don't like that song. I always thought it was interesting because I don't understand why Someday, I Suppose, the song in this movie wasn't as popular as the other one. But that was just me. I think because I wrote down all the
nights in a nightclub for many years, and you had to play "Knock on Wood" by the Mighty Mighty Boss Stones every week. That was a standard.
I thought they were a great band.
I wrote down the lyrics. I remember Someday, I Suppose, is one of those songs that I liked enough that I listened to it over and over again and tried to write down the lyrics to get the lyrics down, because since I didn't actually own it and I didn't have the internet and the internet didn't really exist, I didn't know the words. And so I tried to decipher what the words, so I could sing the words properly when I sang the song.
Nice. How'd you do?
You know what? I was thinking about it while I was watching and I'm like, I never checked up to see if I did it right. But like all the other times I've done it, I think I was about 70% correct, strangely, because I'm really bad at like figuring out what people are singing about, because I've got a bad ear for when one word begins and the other word ends in a song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excuse me while I kiss this guy.
Yeah, stuff like that.
We should play you some of our songs sometimes.
Yeah.
Some of the growly metal you might.
Yeah. Good practice.
Trying to pick out words.
That might be a fun game. It's like, yeah, give me a growly metal song, and it's like it could be like a Chinese, like what's the, you don't say Chinese whispers anymore. What's that? Telephone is the name of the game where it's like, okay, yeah, how wrong are you with what was said? Yeah,
we should do that.
If you just guess corpse for every word, you'll be all right with most of them.
So is it like, well, you don't like the IT Crowd, dang it. But the band that Richard's like, the Cradle's Filth or something?
Cradle of Filth. That's a real band, yeah.
Is it a real band?
Yeah.
Yes.
Cradle of Filth.
Yes, seen them.
In fact, is that your band?
No.
Hey, you guys ready to talk about Mansfield Park?
Yes.
Can I say no?
Okay.
No. You may.
Yeah, but here we go anyway. Ahead. So, Mansfield Park is about a girl named Fanny Price, and we're going to get to that. and she stares right at us all the time. The movie is about her looking at us. It makes me feel pretty uncomfortable. But so, we might as well just start here. So, Fanny Price, Jane Austen's British. Fanny has a different meaning on your side of the pond than it does here.
It does.
So what was Jane Austen thinking? And the full name, Fanny Price, it sounds like a stage girl's name or something. I don't know. Or like a
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's her name. Yeah.
Oh man. So in the credits she's known as Fanny Price and also Young Fanny, and both sound just awful.
I know. Yeah. Young Fanny might appear in my awards.
Young Fanny Price. Okay. Anyway, let's get to the plot. So there's a girl named Fanny Price who lives in poverty,
but she has an aunt that has decided to pull her out of that poorhouse, and we're going to decide, is it better to live with people who love you and you're really poor, or is it better to live a life of fabulous wealth with people who can barely tolerate you? So she moves to, what's the name of their mansion? Is it Hampstead or Billabong or something? I don't know.
Mansfield Park.
Mansfield Park.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed it is, John. It's Mansfield Park. She moves there. Sure enough, none of the children like her except for Edmund. He's very nice to her, and he treats her kindly. And then it shows them grown up, and Edmund and Fanny are talking, and Edmund awkwardly says, Fanny, do you think it's okay for cousins to marry each other even if they're raised as children, like brother and sister? And then she doesn't really know what to say, and he says, I'm going to go ask my dad. And anyway, he doesn't come back. We don't see the end of that, so we assume that the father says no way. So he doesn't have the happy ending that Ator's parents gave him. So anyway.
Oh, an Ator reference. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So this movie is definitely about cousin love. This is a super cousin love movie. Anyway, where do I even go? Okay, so all the children are a little grown up, and the big deal is that their father, his fortune is made off of slaves in Antigua, which isn't the best. But it makes him lots of money. And there's a daughter, I think it's, I want to say Henrietta, but that may be persuasion.
No, I think Henrietta's right, yeah.
Henrietta? She's the one getting married to Mr. Rushworth?
Yeah. No, that's Mariah.
Mariah. Very, very good. It's Mariah. Mariah's getting married to Mr. Rushworth because he's wealthy. I love the actor that plays Mr. Rushworth. He, of course, was in the Paddington movies, as well as Notting Hill and a handful of other movies.
Downton Abbey.
I haven't seen a minute of Downton Abbey. I hear that it's a show.
So. You'd love it.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, she's marrying him. He's a buffoon, but he's worth an enormous amount of money, and she's happy that she's going to be married to him until the Crawfords come to town. So Thomas Jr., who kind of rebels against his dad because he doesn't love being a slave driver or like someone who's going to inherit the family business of owning a bunch of slaves, he's kind of wrecking his own life. And part of that is by inviting the Crawfords over. And all the Crawfords want to do, John, is party. And by party, I mean throw a stage play. And they do. And and Sir Thomas comes home in
the Tales of ribaldry.
Sir Thomas comes home in the middle of their raging stage production. Oh, anyway, what happens is the sister, you have is it Frank Crawford, and what's his sister's name? Mary?
Yes, Mary.
Mary. Yeah. So Mary's lovely, and immediately Edmund starts to fall in love with Mary, and Frank starts to turn his attention to Fanny. Fanny says that she just doesn't trust him. So there's something that because all Jane Austen women have this sixth sense about rakish rogues, right? They just know that something's wrong. And she knows this about Frank, and Frank kind of persists, and he starts to look like a good enough guy, right? And she moves back in with her family for a little bit to hang out with them, and Frank kind of pursues, gives him the
Frederick.
Frederick?
Henry.
Henry.
Okay, Henry.
Oh, gosh, I knew we were going to have a big problem with the names. Yeah, that's why I love Clueless.
I'm glad
so
I'm not alone.
I need like my whiteboard.
Sharon Dion is, yeah. Okay, sorry. Frederick
Henry. Henry gives her the coolest gift ever. It's this big box that explodes with doves and has fireworks and everything. And she said no to him so many times, but he seems so genuine. And she says yes, and they're going to get married. She even kisses him, which do you even need to perform the rites at this point? It's done, isn't it? And then the next morning she wakes up and says, no, never mind. And it's weird, because there's this moment where he says, I've changed. I want to be a better person. And she says, that's what worries me the most, is that you're changeable, which seems really like a catch 22 for someone who maybe has had a rough past and wants to be better.
Mm. Yeah.
It's politics. He's a flip flopper. You can't be a flip flopper.
Yeah. But so that gives him zero room to ever be a better person, right? And so that's what is going to kind of make this story interesting, because she says no to him. He gets so upset that he goes back to Mansfield Park and he sleeps with Mariah, who is married to Mr. Rushworth, and I guess that's not good for their marriage. But so the question I guess I have is, if she had said yes to him in the wedding and they'd gotten married, is there any reason to believe he would not have remained faithful? I mean, maybe because he did so quickly go off with another lady, but I think there's the possibility they could have been happily married. I don't know.
No, I think he was always a rake.
He was always going to be a rake. Wrong. It was going to come out at some point.
Yeah, she knew he was a wrong'un. Yeah.
Okay, that's why this is interesting, right?
That's
the whole thing. I mean, this is what I kind of concluded, because I've been, what's his name?
Henry Crawford.
Yeah, I've been Henry Crawford before. And so I feel like there's just like a little bit of sympathy there, where it's like, why don't I found a glass of wine. I opened it. What more can I do? You know, like, that was a Futurama line. But I think I know I'm doing my thing where I just make noises and I don't say anything. I apologize. I'll be honest with the listeners. I've been on a lot of drugs today. I did a lot of drugs today. There's a backstory to that, which I won't go into detail right now. It's not as exciting as it sounds. Okay, let me just sum up.
They put a camera up John's bottom.
I don't think he would have had an affair with the other woman if they did get married. If he married Fanny, I don't think he would have gone off and done the thing. I think he was very sincere. I don't think she had anything – like, he's not like the other Jane Austen characters. He's not like a character that we're going to meet later who's like, oh, like he's – like every relationship he's in is a manipulation for more power rather than any kind of romance.
And setting up his mistresses while trying to get married?
Yeah. I don't think this guy was like that. He did have a mistress. You know, it would seem he would have a mistress, but I don't think it's like that.
So,
true to say that what he may not have gained much from marrying Fanny. After all, she wasn't worth very much money, she wasn't worth any money at all. So I suppose you could assume that he honestly was in love with her and wanted to marry her for love.
I think his intentions were good, right? But I do fear that his temperament, and I think that's the idea here, is that with his temperament, he would have at some point become bored. And
I agree.
I think possibly. There's no way to know. If only we could do – why can't Mansfield Park be a sliding doors so we would know, so we'd have more stories?
Yeah, that would be interesting.
But the conclusion I finally came to is love – I think what Jane Austen is saying is just because someone becomes a better person from your union, like I think he would have become a better person.
It's possible, yeah.
It's possible. That doesn't make it right, because she wouldn't have become a better person. People don't get together just because one of them needs to be fixed. And I think that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
They come together because both people need to be fixed. And obviously two damaged people can fix each other, and that's perfectly healthy.
That's true. It's very healthy. Yeah.
I also, at the time, I felt like she was being a bit foolish in refusing him. Because the reality of that situation in that time as a woman in her situation was that, you know, she wasn't going to get her happy ever after. She wasn't going to get Edmund.
Shut up and be grateful is what you're saying.
I'm saying that she, you know, to all intents and purposes, he was a changed man who was offering her a decent, stable life.
I'm amazed by
with
this.
A bit of money.
Team why Henry behavior.
Why didn't
I did not
she
like
say, I'm really surprised that she refused him. I know, obviously, because she was in love and she had, she knew that she was going to end up with Edmund, obviously.
That's the thing that actually bothers me. I think this would have been more interesting, because she's doing the thing. She's like, oh, I'll marry you. Oh, I won't marry you. Oh, I don't know why. I just have a bad feeling about you. I think the movie would have been a lot more interesting if she was like, okay, my choice is I can marry someone who loves me, but I don't love, and so some good could come of that. Or I believe in this Austen ideal of love, where we both have this mutual affection for each other and we both can grow together. But that's not on the horizon. She just believes in the idea of it without having someone in mind. I think
she has someone in mind.
Yeah, that's the problem I have. I kind of am annoyed that she's like wishy-washy on this guy who like, is this guy good? Is this guy bad? I'm wishy-washy on it. I don't know. But the real reason is because she's in love with someone else, you know? So that's like just a bit more basic.
If there had not been a hot cousin, you think she maybe would have said yes to.
I don't think she would have. I think it would have been interesting if she said no, if she's like, the ideal of love is more important than the possibility of half love. Like,
as in the opposite of what Mariah did, which was take someone who she knew she didn't love, but who would give her a good life.
Right. And also, like, the thing that Mariah did is like, that would give me a good life and also that would get me away from this person I'm really hung up on. Right. Like, there's that because, you know, she's also in love with this gross, weird guy. But I think that's another thing that Mansfield Park kind of does well. It's Mansfield Park is all over the place. It's like, you know, this guy, it's like he needs saving. And so this girl can save him. But also this girl is, you know, the negative aspects of love is what she's experiencing. And so she marries this dork to get away from this guy that she's kind of obsessed with and all the bad things that that brings.
Is that the weirdest, like, decision by her? Like, I don't – so it, I don't know. But I will say Mansfield Park is the most complex of these three movies as far as everything that's going on. I didn't even finish summing it up. The good part's still coming. Because we have this totally disgraced relationship now with Mariah and Henry, and Henry's sister Mary counsels the family, and it's just a triumphant counseling that she gives to them, where she says, "Let's just wait until Tom Jr. dies because it's going to happen. Get used to it, folks. And then I'm going to marry Edmund, and then we will let them back into our company, and slowly you can let them back into company as well. And this is what's best for family, and it's what everyone has to do." And then Edmund says, "I don't love you anymore because you're trying to kill my brother with your words." And so she gets the boot. Her and Henry go off and do more ribaldry elsewhere with acquaintances who also love ribaldry, I guess. And now the door is open, John, for sweet cousin love, where Edmund realizes that the woman he's loved this whole time has been right in front of him. And to be fair, there is a moment early in the movie where his father says, "I can tell you're in love. Why don't you ask the girl to marry you?" And Edmund says, "Fanny?" And he says, "No, Mary, of course." Anyway, Fanny.
So, Fanny, Fanny.
I don't know why they didn't say they loved each other from the very beginning. And I mean, I get it because I would never say that in real life. Like, I understand, you know, the trepidation, but I feel like in these movies, everyone talks about everything. You know, there's not, I don't really see the British reservedness in not saying exactly how you feel. I feel like everybody says exactly how they feel all the time, except for one thing, and that's who they like. That's the only thing you never ever say.
But and, I would argue. Sorry, carry on.
No. I'm just ranting.
I would argue that Edmund does say that he loves Fanny on more than one occasion. So immature.
Every time, 2 hours. Every time.
He did say that on more than one occasion, and but he explained that, you know, he did love her, but on a different level. It was a different, you know, he had to explain right at the end that he did love her, but this time it was, you know, in a way, in a, as a man loves a woman, rather than as a brother loves a sister, as a cousin.
that's just it, though. Like, that's the thing you can't say. It's like romance. Okay, just lack of a better word.
The hardest thing for him to say is it's hard for him to say, because he, like you said, he can say "I love you" like a sister or whatever, but what he really wants to say is "I love you, Fanny," but in the sense that he wants to say "I love you, vagina," right?
Yes. So. Thank you. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say. I think they could have done, I mean, because It is weird because they are cousins and they were raised as brother and sister.
Can we talk about the Westermark effect that should have happened here? Like,
what's that?
That's your favorite thing. With the Westermark. The Westermark effect does not apply to Jane Austen movies because, from what my understanding, if you're not blood related and you grow up together, you fall in love with each other. And that's the same thing in Wuthering Heights, too.
Yeah. The Westermark effect is when children are raised together, that by the time you hit puberty, you're just never going to be attracted to each other physically because you were raised together. And that's why brothers and sisters don't typically try to get married.
Yeah, I guess that is a thing. But okay, but what actually happens is that doesn't apply because they do love each other. Mm. And I feel like they could have made some mention, like someone could have said, you know, hey, do you like each other? Well, that's gross. Like any other but they were the only two people who were saying that. Like several characters, like Mary came up, just blatantly came out and said, oh, you know, you're in love with Edmund, right? And she's like, oh, and she said it like it was nothing. Like there's no scandal involved here. So they could love each other. There's no problem with them loving each other. They just didn't say they loved each other. And it took a movie to do that.
Although, again, he did say to her at the ball, I love you more than words can say. I demand the first dance with you tomorrow.
More than cousin words can say. More than Ator words, yeah.
And at one point, he does say, clearly you and I are beyond speaking when words are clearly not enough. It's, oh.
Yeah.
He was already saying that.
I kind of feel like Austen love... A requirement of Austen love for the catapult of love to go off, it needs to be wound up. And the characters know it. They know they have to not say in order for it to have the kinetic energy that it has at the end of the movie.
That's a very good way of putting it, I think.
Can I mention quickly the happiest ending of this movie? It's that the father gives up the slave trade, and now he gets his fortune from tobacco. And if you guys could help me remember where tobacco comes from in the early 1800s.
And also what a wonderful product it is and how it's enhanced humanity. That reminds me, isn't that I'd get this the wrong way around, but the guy who invented – oh, I get this the wrong way around, but it's something like the guy who invented leaded petrol – then it was realized it was terribly harmful. Then he went and invented and thought he'd make amends by inventing CFCs and refrigerators. And then he died after a machine he'd made. He became very ill and he made a machine to hoist himself out of bed and he got strangled in the machine.
Oh, wow.
Mechanism of his own machine. I think I'm right in saying.
Why haven't we watched this movie?
Interesting knowledge.
That's nuts.
So, yeah, going from slavery to tobacco is
there was
the same
lot
journey.
Of some uncomfortable subjects, weren't there? There was quite a lot of racism. There was a bit of misogyny. There was creepy dad figure.
Oh my goodness, the dad was so creepy.
Attraction. There was a bit of gaslighting going on.
Edmund, I think during the raging kegger play, I think he was in blackface, wasn't he?
Yes. Like,
so that's nice.
I don't want to sound wrong here. It was kind of nice to see, and I'm not saying it's nice to see blackface, but there was just this weird thing, and they didn't have to do it, and I'm kind of torn on whether it was a good idea. It's probably a bad idea, but I kind of found it interesting that, like, in the background of this movie, they're kind of saying, it's like, okay, all of this frivolous stuff about who loves who or whatever, that's kind of... It's kind of nothing compared to the atrocities that these people are making in the background of the movie, you know? Like, this whole slavery thing is happening, and it's happening under their noses, and they're just frivolous and just nonplussed about it, and they don't care, and they do whatever, and they, you know, have plays with blackface, and they don't know what's going on, and it's only for a moment, just a moment where she just looks at some really gross images where she's kind of like, oh my gosh, there's real bad stuff happening in the world. And then she's pulled out of it into, you know, the Jane Austen rest of the story. And I don't know how I feel about it. I think it's like a very weird, bizarre choice that they hint, they because they talk about slavery so much at the beginning of the movie, and they talk about it just as a background thing, and then it's just shown as a horrifying thing for a second, but that's not what the movie's about at all. It's a weird choice.
Mm. Mm. And it's almost like those images are similar to her stories that she writes, you know, the shocking, dramatic love stories that she writes. And those images are really confronting and similar but completely different to what she imagines and writes about.
Oh.
I think that was quite a clever modern addition. Because I don't think Jane Austen wrote about that, did she?
Right.
So also, I found it interesting that that brief period where she went back to live with her family, how like she how unhappy she was to be back in poverty, right?
She felt at home there, though, didn't she? You know, her whole life, she was basically ditched in this environment where nobody really appreciated her. She was treated a bit like one of the servants, given a small opportunity to be part of the family. But a lot of the time, her aunt, evil Aunt Norris, sure she remembered who she was. So it must have been quite a relief to go back and be amongst people. She said that, didn't she, that she was looking forward to being back amongst people who loved her for who she was.
I think she was looking forward to clearing the table, like finally clearing the table after years of not being cleared. Someone had to clear that table.
That was quite a satisfying wiping down, wasn't it?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, get the maggots off the table. Thanks. Yeah.
There was one thing we wanted to highlight was that everyone
thinks
Brighton's cool.
They
went to Brighton for their honeymoon.
Honeymoon in Brighton.
Brighton's sadly, just all there over wasn't these a films. Scene to show Brighton, but there it was.
Well, so the next movie is going to completely eschew Brighton for the charms of Bath and Lyme.
Yeah.
By the way, you can edit this out, but confirm Thomas Midgley Jr., American chemical engineer who developed leaded gasoline and CFCs, then got polio and invented a hoist to get himself out of bed and was strangled by his own mechanism.
Thomas Midgley. What a life. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great story.
Yeah, that should be... I don't
scientists call him a one-man environmental disaster.
I don't like the guy very much because remember I mentioned how I didn't really like Don't Look Up very much, but I did rather enjoy The Big Short. So I think maybe Adam McKay should make the biopic of Thomas Midgley Jr. I think you know he'd be able to throw in a bit of like, okay, you know what, here's a person who just who had the wrong attitude on what the world needs his entire life and made all this stuff. All right, so Persuasion, forgive me, everybody, I'm on drugs. Hopefully I can remember like what Persuasion is. I didn't go over these notes completely, but let's just get through this. Anyway, it's Jane Austen times. It's the Jane Austen era of human history right now, right? And Sally Hawkins is plays this woman. And she is just kind of packing up her giant estate that she has with her father. They've fallen on hard times. They have to move in with like kind of their cousin, neighbor friends, and get new tenants for their Downton Abbey like estate. Right.
Mm.
It's like an admiral and they're like, oh no, an admiral. And then she shudders because she realizes that this admiral's wife is the sister, I think, of the guy she turned down 8 years ago, that she was persuasioned to turn down because he was just a poor seaman. Yeah. She is feeling guilt about it because apparently she really loved him, and she kind of had to say against her will, sort of, it's implied. We don't see it. It would have been nice to see a flashback or something. But she's like, hey, Captain Frederick Wentworth, you're not good enough for me. You don't have the means that I require. And so I'm turning you down. Yeah. And now she's 27 years old and she's been filled with regret her entire life because she turned him down. And now he's going to come back into her life. And so this whole movie is them awkwardly you know, they broke up and they have to hang out with each other, pretty much, is what the movie is. So it's like, and so she's like, does he care about me? Has he forgotten me completely? And he's like, she spurned me, and, you know, what do I do about it? Has she ever really cared for me? And once again, running theme, they don't discuss their feelings with each other, which I totally get. But they discuss all other feelings with everybody else, and everybody else talks about everything, and everyone does all that. So, anyway, some stuff happens, and some of the other variables are as thus. The people she's staying with, I can't remember their last name, but two ladies, Louisa and Henrietta, both vie for Wentworth's affections because, one thing we didn't mention is kind of like Heathcliff from Wuthering Heights. Once he's back in town, he's loaded. He's super freaky rich, and he was just a poor person before. But now he's super freaky rich.
Made his fortune at the war.
Yeah.
In the war.
Yeah, which I have a question about that later. And so they're both all over him, except one of them is kind of engaged to someone else, and she kind of consents to that. And then the other one, I don't know, just kind of tips over on a bridge and nearly dies. She falls like 3 feet. What's going on there? She's like, catch Louisa. Me. Yeah. She's like, trust fall. And then he's like, yikes. And he misses, or she does a swan dive onto the pavement. Something really bad happens. Anyway, she's sucked out of the picture that way.
Yeah.
And then another guy comes along, and that's Edmure Tully from Game of Thrones comes along. And he says, hey, Sally Hawkins, I can get you your ancestral home back that you always wanted. Cousins. And we're cousins. Big bonus plus. Yeah, we can keep all the money in the family and enjoy all we're cousins with benefits is pretty much his proposal to her. He kind of says, hey, you know what? Why don't you marry me and I'll give you your house back? And she's like, okay, let me think about it. Obviously, I love this other guy and everyone knows it and he knows it and we all know it and we all know it. And in the meantime, Captain Wentworth thinks he might be engaged to the comatose, the brain damaged Louisa.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he never had any affection for her at all.
Yeah.
But rumors are going around.
Yeah.
Now, I think he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. I think he was trying to bury his love for Anne and trying to find the least worst option.
Right. Okay. He awkwardly
so I think he did
couldn't,
have some
like,
affection.
When they go on walks and stuff, you know, like they're all together and he's like, oh, I can't like hang out with my ex, and so I have to hang out with this other girl.
He does single out Louisa, yeah. But doesn't he seem genuinely shocked when there's like a word is you two are engaged? He's like, what? Yeah. We're not engaged. Well, people think you are, so I guess I must marry her then.
Yes.
It's so weird.
Yeah, that was
very strange. Like he couldn't, you know, I mean, he has the face of someone who could just say, forget you, I'm not marrying you. And everyone would think that's normal because people with faces like that would say something like that. And so I don't really know, you know, why he's so concerned, but it's just like this kind of keeping up appearances thing. But his friend says, hey, everybody thinks you're going to marry this person. He's like, oh no, if everybody thinks I'm going to marry this person, then I guess I have to marry this person. Too bad she's in a coma and she's, you know, she's 90% brain dead and most of her head is left on the cobblestones of Lyme or wherever. And so he's kind of put off by that. Obviously. And then, like, later in the movie...
Men are so shallow. Look,
she might have, like, mashed potato face, and he's got to look at that every morning.
Yeah, it's possible. Sally Hawkins, in the meantime, she's in conversation, and someone says, oh, yeah, and we can't wait, because Louisa's finally getting married, and Louisa's going to marry the captain, and he's a captain in the Navy... And she's so happy, and they're so good together. And then she's like, oh, no, Captain Wentworth is marrying Louisa after all. And then 5 seconds later, they're like, oh, no, it's Captain...
Fennec.
Beckett? Bennett.
Ben.
Fennec.
Fennec. Fennec. Yeah. Fennec. Wennec. Anyways, the other captain.
It's silent W.
Yeah, yeah. It's like that was a weird in the captions. I couldn't get his name straight because it was weird. And so it's like, but in both situations, like the one guy is like, oh no, you're free from what's her name. She decided to go marry this other guy. And then, you know, when they're talking to Sally Hawkins, they're like, oh, by the way, you're free. And so there's no real time for them to just kind of be like, oh, I'm so distraught by this. They're distraught for like 5 seconds at a time, which is totally fine. So anyway, everything is open, and she's like, oh, all I have to do is not marry this other guy. But before she can even say no to the other guy, her friend Harriet says, hey, that other guy, he is going to marry you, and then he's going to keep a mistress, and it's all a big plot that he has to take your estate, and he's a bad guy. And she's like, oh, thank you for saying that. I guess I'll marry the love of my life instead of the guy I didn't like, you know.
So my understanding, though, was she before she learned that, she was already not going to say yes. Like, hadn't she already told someone else that it was absolutely not true that she had agreed to get married to that guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a similar situation, isn't it? She saw him for who he was.
Yeah. So and here's what gets me about these movies, right? And I think Sense and Sensibility has a moment like this, too, where Wentworth and Anne are together and they both know they're available and they both know they're in love with each other. And he's about to tell her so they can get married. But then her family comes in and interrupts and he has to leave. And well, I guess that's it for their future because, you know, they couldn't like find a quiet room.
Yeah, that was
how different
so
would it be
funny
if texting existed at this time?
I know that's funny. It would have defeated
or Tinder.
but
she, in all seriousness, a woman in that time at her age and position in society would not be able to go into a room with another man that she was not related to or married to.
Often the same thing.
Well, good thing everyone's cousins. That's the reason, right? That's the big convenience of cousin love.
I don't
love.
Think she knew anybody she wasn't related or married to.
Actually, I think you'll find that Frederick was not a relative.
Okay, yeah, fine. Frederick, in this case, Frederick wasn't a relative. But okay, that brings us to my favorite part of the movie. I'm just gonna say this really quick. She's in a room with Frederick, I guess illegally. And they're about to say something, and then someone says, hey, can we talk to you for a minute? And Frederick says, oh, I have to leave. And then she's like, oh, I must talk to Frederick. And he walks out the door, and seriously, 2 seconds later, she walks out the same door, and he is nowhere to be seen.
He's ran for the hills.
He has warped out of there. He has, like, some kind of, like, personal transporter Star Trek device, and he warped to his house, and she does a big run Lola run scene where she runs to his house, and like his friend guy is there, and he's like, oh yeah, in the past 30 seconds since you ran over here from the other side of town, he's written you this letter, and it's sealed. And she opens the letter, and he's like, oh, I love you, I love you. And then she runs to where he thinks where she thinks he is, and it's like the carriage, and it's like his friends, and they're like, oh, yeah, he went back to Chapman Place or whatever that place is, and then she runs back across town, Run Lola Run style, back to where she started, where they were in the room together.
And it's she's a good like, half marathon.
It's like she ran all over town, and then she's like, she meets up with him, and he's just calm and collected, and it must have been his Navy training, and he's fine, but she's like, and she's sweating all over him, and it's really embarrassing, and she declares love, and okay, here's the rudest thing ever.
Oh, I know.
So they love each other, and so they're going to kiss, and he makes absolutely no effort to lean down the 2 feet of distance between him and her.
He's thinking about all the sweat.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, I don't know about this. He really makes her work for it, so she kind of has to like breathe heavy and jump into his face for that final kiss.
It takes 30 seconds for them to kiss.
Yeah.
It could be slow-mo.
And also, he's talking to that guy. And they just ignore him.
Shut up, Charles.
He's talking about his gun and what have you. And he kind of gets cropped out of the picture.
I like Charles. Charles is the husband of Sally Hawkins' sister, and her sister is the worst. She's terrible. Oh, but her brother-in-law is kind of cool. I kind of like that guy. I'd hang out with him. Yeah. That's all right. So, anyway, that is Persuasion.
May I make a comment about the sister as an actress? Amanda Hale is an excellent actress who was in the White Queen miniseries, which I don't know if you've seen that, but that is excellent, and she plays a really good character.
Sounds bonnety.
No, that's familiar. Yeah,
that's pre-Bonnets. That is Henry the Seventh as time. She plays the mother of Henry the Seventh. So it's a really good. If you're interested in medieval sort of history, then it's a really good miniseries called The White Queen.
White Queen, not familiar.
It's interesting.
I'll watch it
because the other
actress,
the other movie version of Persuasion. Is it the one with Kieran Hines and Amanda Root, right?
Yes.
And which I'd seen before. And the lady that plays Anne's sister in that is so good. And I was really worried that this wouldn't match it. And it does. It's a slightly different energy. But, like, her sister's just awful. And she's the least self-aware person in the movie, right? And she just plays it so well. She does a great job.
I made a note that all of the bad characters in this book/film, and most of them are bad, are really overdone. I feel like, you know, we love Anthony Stewart Head, but he, you know, it was just too much almost. They were so bad.
Yeah, like especially the men. I have to say this, you know, I have a dim view, I'm afraid, guys, of our sex at the best of times, but my goodness, it was a reminder of just how awful it must have been. You know, if it was even close to like this genuinely in those days, my goodness, it was a horrible time to be a woman.
I feel like they didn't really, the characters didn't have any subtleties at all. It was just too much.
So I felt this was muted from the previous movie version. I thought that this was not quite as over the top. Because I have to compare the two movie versions, but anyway, it's fascinating. Can I say just really quickly? I adore this story and the book, and I really adore this movie. I don't think it has the complexity as Mansfield Park, but I just love this story about a love that was lost and she didn't want to lose it, and it was her crummy aunt, right? It's always in these movies, it's the aunts, right? It's Aunt Russell, Lady Russell, yeah. But for me, like, this movie, like, captures how I feel love should feel like. It should feel like a miracle that that happens, right? And it should just be an incredible moment where you can't believe you finally got what you've been hoping for and you thought that maybe had slipped from your grasp, and then you have it. And I just love it. And this movie turns me into a weepy little girl.
Yes, and I wept at the end, didn't I?
You did.
And, I didn't weep at the end of the other films.
No, so
you weren't crying at the end of Clueless?
No.
Noted. Yeah, I mean, it's Josh is going to jail. So yeah.
Maybe
no
America,
no happy cry.
Get away with it in the UK, I think. Depending on maybe not actually.
He might.
If he was 19, probably not. If he's 18, maybe.
Because she's 15 in this movie because she's...
Didn't she say she's 16?
She's got to be 16 because she's testing for her driver's license.
Yeah.
No. She says, Ty says, Cher says, how old are you? And Ty says, I turned 16 in May. And then Cher says, well, my birthday's in April, and as someone older than you, I have this advice. So
does April happen in the movie? Because, I mean, she's doing her driver's test. You got to be 16 to do your test.
I guess eventually April shows up, I guess. So she squeaks on by, but for like half of the movie, she's 15 years old. She was 15 years old.
Yeah, Michael 15, Caine. I agree.
Or 27.
Yeah.
So I think Alicia Silverstone wasn't that old in this movie. I think
she wasn't.
Like
she was
18 or 19?
One of the best ones. I think she was 19. But Paul Rudd's 26.
Paul Rudd's 26.
Did you look him up? I thought Alicia Silverstone was like 16 or something. I thought she was.
So I think
really
you mean you're right. I think
she's 19.
Okay.
So anyway, it's pretty close. So I don't know if you guys watched the Buffy the Vampire Slayer TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But who was it? Charisma Carpenter, who was playing a high school student when she was like nearly 30 years old.
Yeah.
Also, did you not think, as you mentioned that, I thought Christian in Clueless looked a bit like a sort of more acceptable Spike, James Masters.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
kind of a baby face Spike. A little bit. Yeah.
What did James Masters say about my eyes?
But they were dead. Inside.
No, he did not.
No, he said something nice.
He said I had beautiful eyes.
Oh, Masters. That's cool.
That was like a big moment in my life when I met him.
Oh, man.
And he said I had beautiful
eyes. She's touching her décolletage even as we speak.
If I had a fan now, it would be like clutched tightly against my chest.
Mickey has so many connections. That's crazy.
I know, man.
Going back to Persuasion, John, you said, and I totally agree with you, this is what I said to Mickey at the time.
Okay.
I said, I wish we had a flashback. Because the whole film of Persuasion is telling me that, like, that What's-Her-Face is so amazingly wonderful that Wentworth was in love with her and vice versa. He was the absolute love of her life. He was an amazing person. But I see no evidence of that. I don't see why they were that much in love with each other. It's all so unspoken that you just think, what were you like when you were together? What was it? I can't imagine it because
I disagree.
It's just all silent looks.
Well, I can give you a little
explanation of why they were so in love.
Yeah.
A few years before, Anne was a very pretty girl, but her bloom vanished early. As even in its height, her friends found little to admire in her. Anyway, sorry.
Are those words
very well put?
I disagree really strongly because I think that's part of the beauty of this story, that you don't need to have a flashback. You get the feeling of the love that they had through the story and the, you know, sort of resulting end.
Yeah, it's made clear that they loved each other, but I just never saw why. I didn't get a taste of.
No, but the focus of the story.
I was shown very clearly
that
it's there, but I didn't get a taste of it.
I think I would have liked a 30-second glimpse of them at Brighton, and she's sitting on the beach, and he's lifting weights or body surfing. You know.
Well, the thing is, I mean, maybe just two or three frames or something, you know, because they're so like he's so glowery and everything. And she's just she's smiley, but there's so much pain in her smile. And I think Sally Hawkins is good and she's able to do that, you know. But if they just had just two or three frames that showed them like in the sunlight, like at a picnic or something, and they're younger and they're laughing. They're just like squinty eyed laughing. And it's just, and they both just shared that moment together. Then that would be really cool. But here's another thing that I think here's another possibility. Is it possible that they created the love story in the absence? Like it didn't work out at this time, but since it worked, it ended so horribly that it was the ending of it. That they dwelled on for 8 years, and it was the hurt of that they dwelled on for 8 years, and so that hurt turned into a longing that may not have been. They romanticized their own story, possibly.
Yeah, what probably helped is as they were fantasizing about each other, they pictured each other as cousins. I will say one thing I really like though about the story and about the movie is when they finally meet back up and she doesn't really know how to react, right? And she just tries to keep her calm and he's kind of mean, right? Like he makes some offhand comments that are directed towards her. But it's not because he's a jerk, but like he's really still hurt and maybe he didn't think he still
he's
was
really
until
angry.
He met her. Once he saw her again, he realized how hurt he was. And that's how he kind of
But that was kind of jerky. He was subtweeting her very aggressively.
A weak spirit, which is always open to persuasion, can never be relied upon.
And then he looked straight at the camera and said, "Persuasion, persuasion, persuasion."
And I think that's why. Well, if we're about to come on to awards very soon, I think that's why he can't win my Most Perfect Gentleman award.
Because he was a bit
like, he let his bitterness overcome him in a social, polite setting.
You can understand that, can't you? They were like,
I can.
Completely in love.
I can understand it, but I am not a most perfect gentleman either.
Like, I know.
So much more than my life. I'll do anything for you.
Yeah. I'm like,
I have to ditch you because you're not rich enough.
When I see Wentworth, I'm like, that me. But I expect my screen heroes to be better than me. Because
But isn't their chemistry amazing? Like, the two actors, don't you think?
Yes. They do Sally Hawkins smoldering and looks.
Rupert Henry Jones. I think they have excellent chemistry.
Are they cousins in real life?
I put it on, I don't know. I'm a fan of Sally Hawkins because I'm used to seeing her in, she has that weird mouth, you know? Like, she has a weird mouth. Like, where it looks like she's like
very highly muted, John.
I know, but I mean, she's great though. It looks like she is like, she has like a she has like a pen between her cheeks that like makes her mouth bigger or something. It's like weird. And what I'm saying is like, she's in that movie, like Happy Go Lucky, which I've never seen. And she's in a bunch of other movies where she just has that big gigantic smile that's like bigger than her head. but I'm really surprised because, then she goes and does, you know, stuff like The Shape of Water. And I always bring up, that movie Never Let Me Go that we talked about on this podcast several years ago, and her serious turn in that. And then in this one, she's just really serious. I'm serious when I say that. She has that big, huge smile, but she has that pained smile and that pained expression, and you kind of feel something behind her eyes. And so I think I kind of give credit to the chemistry to her anyway, that she's able to kind of show that on her face.
She's very good.
She's very good.
She's good.
Shape of Water is such an amazing film.
I haven't seen it.
If you like Sally Hawkins at all, you'll see a lot of her. Yeah.
I like cross-species land dweller and sea creature love scenes.
That's all you need.
That's all I need.
You got that? You got plenty.
All right. We ready to do some awards?
Let's do awards. Yeah. Let's do contact info really quick. Yeah. Okay, everybody out there listening, give us an email at yoursminetheirspodcast@gmail.com. Tell us anything that we can possibly hear that we would want to hear, or even stuff that we don't want to hear, and we promise we'll still read it and talk about it and discuss it and apply it to our lives. Go to yoursminetheirspodcast.blogspot.com, and you can directly download every single MP3 file of every movie you've ever done, and also see a cool still image from every podcast that we've ever done. And
it's curated by John.
Cool. Yes, it's really good stuff. Find us on the Facebook page. That's where you can vote and actually affect what we see and the categories and the individual movies that we see. That's all up to you. So your ballot is Facebook, at least until we can come up with a better product that doesn't, you know, mess with people's political beliefs. Also, it's not iTunes, it's like Apple Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts, give us 5 stars and give us a review. Say anything you want after you give us 5 stars. We have a phone number, 801-896-4542, 801-896-4542. I recently got an email saying we have 30 days to use this phone number, otherwise Google's taking it back. So call the number, or your privileges will be taken away. Call it. 801-896-4542. Do it. That's all the things. Okay, that's all the things.
Did you mention Spotify? We're totally on Spotify.
Oh, we're totally on Spotify. Roy sent me a link to Spotify. It's way too long to read, but if you go to Spotify and search for Yours, Mine, and Theirs, it'll pop up on Spotify.
We just edited together a trailer, which if you're listening to this podcast, then you already know what we're about. But the trailer is great because it makes it sound like we've only ever watched Sylvester Stallone movies and Dream a Little Dream.
Yeah.
Which is almost true.
It's good for that. Yeah. By the way, can we make another trailer? Can we make it like a trailer a year or whatever?
John, I leave the next trailer to you.
Oh, so I have to do the next trailer? Is that what you're saying?
It was way more work than I thought it was going to be, okay?
Well, you did it really fast. You did it in like a week, so well, I'm like, oh, so, okay.
Because what it was like, I remember these great things that we said about certain movies and then trying to find those with some within the 3 hours worth of audio was less fun.
I know. It's the worst. I do that all the time where it's like, I know I said something funny, but then I'm doing something else when I said something funny I can't do. Hey, you know what? That's a good reason to email us or call us. If we say something funny,
yeah,
tell us exactly where it is. Yeah, and then... Yeah. Yeah, we'll credit you in the trailer, in the next trailer that we'll do 5 years from now. Okay. Let's do awards. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Mickey, what do you think? What's the best title of this bunch?
I think Persuasion. Persuasion, just because it tells the story so well. And it's quite short and succinct. Mm.
I felt like there needed to be more persuasioning in the movie. They kind of talked about how they weren't persuasioned, except for that one time where she was persuasioned. That one time at the beginning, but
that was the massive event,
the linchpin
that led to the story.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. That's good persuasion. Okay, Phil, do you have a title?
One of my favorite metal bands is a Swedish band called Persuader, so I've gone for Persuasion because it's close to that.
Mm. Metal.
And I also just kind of like abstract nouns, slightly sort of out of context.
Yeah.
Nouns rather than a sort of flowery title. I like the odd one word simplicity of it.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. Good call, Roy.
Well, I'll see your persuasion and I'll call you with a word that has two less letters, and that's Clueless.
Mm. Okay.
So, there you go. More economical.
Economical. I went with economics. Efficiency as well. Clueless. Because, I mean, she's not dumb. She's clueless, you know? Yeah. I think there's just a slight difference. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right, Roy. Poster.
Oh, the poster. Mansfield Park. I know you love your blues and blacks, but I love the yellow in the poster. I think it's a beautiful poster.
Yeah, what's the actor's name who plays Fanny Price?
Francis O'Connor.
Francis O'Connor. I'm like, Fanny Price, Francis O'Connor. I'm going to get those two mixed up. She's got that presence that can stare you down, and I appreciate that.
And she does multiple times in the movie.
Yes. Phil, poster.
Clueless, just because I can look at it, and for a split second, I can be back in the 90s in my safe place.
There you go. Mickey?
So interestingly, I initially thought Mansfield Park just because, Frances O'Connor, she's so lovely to look at in that picture. Mm-hmm. But then I changed my mind and went for Persuasion because it's got like a double-headed beast of Rupert Penry-Jones and Sally Hawkins, as well as the cob. The deadly cob.
Very nice.
So, yeah, I ended up with Persuasion.
Okay. I picked Mansfield Park. I like the eyes. I like the eyes staring back at me. And the yellow is got its own kind of soothe. Okay. Mickey, best opening credits?
Clueless. Just the music. The 90s music. It's just...
Kids in America playing the music, and the credits go, and it really fits, and they animate them in a cartoon way. I pick Clueless as well, so I'll say that.
Is that ironic? We're the kids of America? Because those are the Beverly Hills kids of America.
I guess it's who the kids of America want to be. Maybe it's an aspirational thing, maybe.
Okay. All right.
Okay, Phil, credits.
Clueless.
Oh.
Yeah.
90s tunes.
Roy, is it official?
I also chose Clueless. I do want to say, though, that the ending credits... I honestly think I could reproduce those in about 30 minutes on PowerPoint.
Well, that's true. But, is it because they're slightly more complicated than usual closing credits, which are just black, are just white titles on black?
I don't know. It's just like even the transitions, they all felt like, oh, I recognize those transitions. I don't know.
But it's definitely PowerPoint. I think they saved a lot of money.
It's a nice PowerPoint.
Okay. Okay, Roy, best technology.
Okay, honorable mention is the Dove launching box.
Yeah, I thought for sure that was your pick, the Dove launching box.
Well, my pick, and I didn't even realize this was referenced in Iggy Azalea's Fancy, but it's the Perfect Outfit Selector.
Oh,
that little computer that Cher
the
has.
The computer she has to select outfits.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
That is not a touch screen. That is never a touch screen. Lies.
Yeah, no, they didn't exist like that. Like a touch screen on those, like one of those big, huge
CRT.
Okay, Phil, do you have a technology?
She could have like chosen her outfits with like a duck hunt gun on one of those. No, my tech was pagers.
Oh wow! Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Doing your ways to contact the podcast. You don't have a pager? No.
No. No, I never got into pagers, and I don't understand why she has a cell phone and a pager.
Yeah, that was weird, because when they had the pagers out, I was thinking, oh, this must be before cell phones, and then they had cell phones.
Yeah.
There was
about
2 weeks when I was at school where everyone in the sort of top 10% income bracket in my class had pagers.
Huh. Pagers?
Pagers for about 2 weeks, and then that was it. They were never seen or heard from again.
I got a mobile phone in 1998, which I think was probably a bit late.
Mine
wasn't until 2002.
Oh, really? Mine was about,
I think mine was about 2000. There was a long stretch, because I got mine in, it was when I was at university, and it was the weird sequence where like half the people I knew had cell phones and half didn't. It was like a long transition before everybody got a cell phone, and that was like, yeah, I feel like I was kind of in the middle when I got mine finally. Okay. Oh, I haven't said my technology. Wait, Mickey, did you say your technology?
I have not done mine either.
Go ahead.
So, my technology is the stairs on the Cobb. Without them, there would not have been a happy ending.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So, okay. I picked that as my hero. honorable mention. That was an honorable mention. No, I picked the honorable mention to when they were playing the sisters were playing it sounds like the glasses, the goblets full of water. Apparently that's a real invention that I think it's invented by Benjamin Franklin, called an armonica, not a harmonica, an armonica. That kind of plays, that sounds like the glass. So that's pretty cool. But also I chose the stairs on the fence, which is called a stile, where there's like a set of stairs, like in the middle of the fence, and you climb up the stairs to go over the fence and then climb back down the stairs on the other side, so that ladies don't fall on their heads going over the fence.
Although they can sometimes be a bit rickety and scary, can't they?
Yeah. At least you're a bit, if your hips aren't the best, they're hard to get your leg over, so to speak.
Yeah. It looked like there was quite a reach to reach over there.
Can we just go back to the Cobb? Like, I think there's a 98% chance that she ends up with a sprained ankle.
Yeah.
Instead of going into a coma.
Yeah, it looks like she landed on her ankle and, like, her, like, tibia shot up through her entire body and out the top of her head.
I think she just launched herself from the top stair, and he was, you know, like a
crowd surfing
gone wrong.
No, she wanted to do the dirty dancing catch. She's like, Wentworth, catch me, dirty dancing style. You're Patrick Swayze. I'm Jennifer Grey. Hello.
Hello. Oh, yeah.
Also, maybe they had a terrible diet with low calcium in those days, so their bones are just made of paper.
She had avian
bones.
They
drank a lot of milk.
Yeah.
Avian bones, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Mickey, best outfit.
So, I think probably Miss Geis's wedding dress. I thought she looked very spiffing.
Oh. Miss Geis. She was like,
oh yeah.
She was like, she's an old lady, but, and she had glasses, but she was she's good looking. Good for her. I think Wallace went up.
She was a good-looking old lady.
Old lady, same age as Mickey.
We don't know how old she was. Although, actually, no, we kind of do, don't we?
We do know how old she was.
Well, we don't know how old she was. We know. Okay, sorry. I'm just going to say it right now. It states that Wallace Shawn's character is 47 years old in this movie, and I'm like, wow. I'm not quite 47, but I'm like right there. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm as old as Wallace Shawn in Clueless. That's where I am now.
That means it's not too late for you, John, because he got married.
That's true. Okay, Phil, do you have an outfit?
I do. Hopefully. They have got to be Christian's incredibly well-pressed brown slacks that were hoisted up to just below his nipples.
Oh, yeah, high slacks. That's funny. Yeah, he was like a madman. Okay, Roy.
Well, I just got to give credit where credit's due to the iconic, and so it's the yellow plaid outfit.
Yeah. That was my honorable mention.
Yeah.
My honorable mention is the red plaid, the black and red plaid, when the school gives her a round of applause for hooking up Miss Geist and Mr. What's-His-Name together, and she like does a little curtsy, and it's a really cool plaid. But my winner, and I don't know if this is allowed, but I think it's an outfit. I'm going to say Christian's yellow car that I think he wears pretty splendidly.
Yeah.
He looks great in that car.
Yeah. Okay.
May I ask, please, is plaid tartan?
Yes. Yeah, check.
Yeah. Okay. You don't say plaid at all? You say tartan?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought plaid was the pattern and tartan was like the material or something. I don't know anything about. I'm colorblind too, so I don't know what that matters.
John can't see plaid or tartan.
Can't see plaid or tartan. Yep. Okay. Roy, best name.
Okay, you're okay. Honorable mention to young Fanny Price.
Doesn't even say Price in the cast list. It just calls it young Fanny, which I think is just
I'm going to go with Travis Birkenstock.
Oh, that was mine.
Very good.
Okay. Phil.
Mine too.
Oh, and yours too. Okay.
Yeah.
Phil, do you have one? Travis.
Fanny.
I put Travis and Fanny. I couldn't decide between the two. And also in the second verse of the oft little saying second verse of Jingle Bells, don't they say, "And soon Miss Fanny Price was seated by my side"? Jingle Bells.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Is it Fanny Price? And soon Miss Fanny
It might be Fanny Bright.
Fanny Bright.
Fanny Bright.
Which is also awful. Oh. Yeah.
Fanny Bright.
I think there is a... It's
soon a
very,
bright Fanny was seated by my side. Yeah.
It's quite a well-known, like, older name. Yeah, there's a famous Erica Jong book called Fanny.
When did it switch to becoming genitalia?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Probably the mods did it.
It was the mods.
Or maybe the Peaky Blinders in the
Erica
20s.
Erica Jong wrote her, like, her book was, I think, 60s, wasn't it? 60s or 70s?
And there was a famous book called Fanny Hill, which ironically was obscene, wasn't it? Not because of the word Fanny, but generally, it was, like, coincidentally, it was a very famously banned book in the 50s and 60s, I think.
Yeah.
So I think it's a relatively late or recent development of the word.
Interesting.
But it's hilarious.
Yeah.
I'm a child.
And Travis Birkenstock.
Travis Birkenstock is pretty good.
It's a pretty cool name.
Yeah, no, that's good.
How self-aware is that to name him that in the 90s?
That's a name you'd give to the police in a panic.
Well, the thing is, he's...
Travis Birkenstock?
He's... Okay, but Travis Birkenstock, I mean, he's like the stoner of the school, and he's not as high class as everybody else, but it's still a very wealthy school, right? Is it possible that... Are they implying that he has hippie parents that happen to start a very successful shoe company?
Yes. I think so.
Yeah.
Okay, Nikki, best food. Food.
Food? That burger that Dad wasn't allowed to eat in Clueless.
Oh,
yum, yum, yum. It looked really good.
That did look good.
It did.
All right, Phil?
The red caviar that was mentioned in Clueless towards the end. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever had caviar, but they have this thing in Sweden that they call caviar, which I think is kind of similar.
Salmon roe.
Yeah, it's not like the posh stuff, but it's really nice. Very salty and delicious.
Okay. Roy, food.
Yeah, cookie dough loaf.
That's what I have, the cookie dough.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
She
haven't got smoke alarms in their
massive mansion, have they?
No smoke alarms.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's a thing.
Mm. Yeah, they're too rich for smoke alarms. That's a a poor way of warning. Okay, best alien. Roy.
Oh, I think it's Fanny Price.
Because she's an alien in both places.
She's an alien. At first, she's an alien in the new house that she moves to, and then when she moves back, she doesn't fit in again.
She's an alien in her own home.
That's really deep.
I like that. That can change your rankings.
Yep. Okay, Phil, alien.
Oh, I'm surprised this hasn't come up already. The Grand Nagus.
Oh.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, Wallace Shawn is the Grand Nagus. That's perfect. He's a Ferengi and fitting because, you know, they're all about capitalism and Clueless has rich people. I don't know.
I bet he has a permit, John.
Permit to whip me.
A permit to whip me.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, Phil, you gotta watch Lower Decks.
Oh yeah, I can't wait. Yeah,
it's good. Okay, Mickey, alien.
The TV transmitter tower that we spotted in either Persuasion or Mansfield Park.
Whoa!
As it panned across.
Can't remember which one it was.
Can't remember which one.
In someone's.
It should not have been there.
Oh, funny! Nice work.
Horse ride. That's a.
TV, I think it was bath. Background. So it was possibly, a bath background, I think. So maybe Persuasion.
Huh. Okay. Sorry, I went with the with Cher's smoke alarm because they don't have a they don't have a smoke alarm as we know it, but their El Salvador housekeeper. It's her responsibility to be their smoke alarm. So yeah. I picked that as
it was obviously
to go down with the ship. He burned to death while saying, it's on fire.
Yeah. Okay. Mickey, best special effects.
You know that scene where Wentworth and Harvell are walking along the cob and the waves are crashing over them, completely drenching them?
Yeah.
It was those waves.
That's good.
That was like really good sci-fi tech.
You know, when I think things, the life might be better back then and romance was so pure and the people were so nice, I think of scenes like that where they have nothing better to do than just walk along the thing where the waves hit them. And that's what they do over and over again.
Well, yeah. Risking certain death.
Yeah.
I've got the same. Mickey and I / death of cold. We did ours independently, but I've got the same. Because British weather is never that bad, so it was an amazing special effect. They managed to capture some wind and rain in Britain. We never have that. But yeah, you're right. I did think that. Like, they go to the cob the first time when it's kind of a bit grey and a bit wet, and that's when she slips and falls over. And you think they might learn their lesson, but no. Even when it's a force 12 hurricane.
Waves that could drag them into the sea at any time.
And wander up and down. They really had nothing to do back then.
And then they were soaked, weren't they? By the end of it, like their hair was stuck to their heads. It was, terrible.
Stupid. It's almost as if they had paid for that location for a day. You could only shoot it from one angle, because in the background it would be modern life.
Yeah, that's totally it, yeah. Okay, but Phil, while you're talking, do you have a FX?
Yeah, the same. Hurricane in the
Cloud. Oh, it was the same. Oh, okay, okay, yeah. Okay, sorry. Oh, I thought you were just talking.
But we both came to the same conclusion.
Okay. Roy?
Mine's similar. It does take place in the Cobb. And it's the fall, which happens mostly off screen. It's like a Transmorphers moment.
This was my theory. It was like, because you don't understand what was supposed to happen. My impression is that the cameraman was responsible for catching her.
Okay, so I was thinking though when I saw it, like how jarring of a moment would it have been if this fall had been filmed more like in the movie Midsommar, when the old people fall off the cliff.
Yeah, no, I guess I can appreciate that they kind of copped out with the fall. Okay, anyway. Interesting. Wait, did you say your effects already?
Yes.
I took a lot of drugs.
Hey, drugs, it's fine.
Yeah. Okay, so my effects is actually another fall, but it's in Clueless, and it's when Ty falls down the stairs.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's one of those classic, okay, there's the stunt woman, and then there's Ty getting up in the next shot. okay, Roy, best location.
Oh, I know people love to honeymoon in Brighton. Yes. And the Cobb certainly has its charms, but I would like to go to Bath.
Yeah.
There you go, I'm done.
Yeah, also Bath, and if I'm going to be specific, the lovely Royal Crescent that What's-Face gets all sweaty jogging up and down.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a pretty cool part of town. Yeah, it looks good. Okay.
And there I looked for, like, anachronisms, looked for, like, TV aerials or anything like that, and I couldn't see any, so they've done a very good job there, or it's been very well preserved.
Huh. Mickey?
I think Lyme, Regis. It's a lovely place. Not just the Cobb, because there's plenty more to it than the Cobb. But, yeah.
I'm amazed they still let people go on the Cobb. It's a bloody death trap.
It looks like a death trap. I picked the Cobb specifically because I would love to brave it one day. Brave the Cobb. Okay.
We were fine, weren't we? We didn't get waves crashing over us like that. And we made it down the stairs, what's more.
It's true, we did.
Oh, well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mickey, best song?
Trixie. I think Change by the Lightning Seeds. Great band.
Oh, I love the Lightning Seeds.
Reminds me very much of the 90s. It's very happy times. Mm-hmm. Good music.
Yeah, no, Lightning Seeds. That's a fun. That's a very fun throwback. There's the 90s stuff we hear over and over again, and then there's the 90s throwbacks, like stuff like Lightning Seeds, where it's just like, oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Phil, song?
Yeah, you're carrying on that theme. You're right. There's lots of deep cuts on the Clueless soundtrack. It could have been anything from that. So I've gone for a dead heat between All Right by Supergrass, which is very nostalgic for me, and My Iron Lung by Radiohead, which is not your most obvious Radiohead song to include on something, but there it is. Very impressive.
Yeah, there were a couple Radiohead songs. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Roy, song.
So if you ask my wife, she would tell you that our song is a Lightning Seed song, The Pure by the Lightning Seeds. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
so
good.
Lovely, huh? So, yeah, John, I don't know if you caught it in my retirement speech. When I addressed my wife, I said, fresh and deep as oceans new when I was that. Anyway.
I think I caught it.
So Persuasion had Symphony 25 in G minor by Mozart, which was lovely.
Yes.
But I'm going to go with Tenderness by General Public from the end credits of Clue.
Okay, Roy, you picked both of mine. That's some of the best Mozart stuff, Symphony 25 in G minor. And then Tenderness by General Public is always delightful. So I'll just go ahead and say Someday, I suppose, because I mentioned it earlier, by Mighty Mighty Boston's.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Roy, best guest.
How about the Mighty Mighty Boston's?
Oh, okay. Phil?
I'm always woolly on the definition of guest, so I just went for Donald Faison. Donald Faison. Yeah.
That's perfect. This might be his first movie he's very good. Done. Yeah, it's interesting. Way different.
Gender epithets aside. Mm-hmm. I thought his character was good, and he made the most of a very small role.
Yeah. Okay, Mickey?
I put Tobias Menzies, because I just love him. I think he's amazing and very handsome.
Right. Which one is that one?
He is the cousin.
Which one?
William Elliot?
He is William Elliot, yeah.
Oh, is he Edmure?
He is Edmure, and he's also in Scottish time travel drama.
Outlander? Oh,
yes.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't know that.
And many other excellent things. Rome. You know the HBO series Rome?
I know of it. Yeah.
He plays Brutus in that. He's excellent.
Oh, him too. Him.
I think he's brilliant.
Very good.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Okay.
I definitely recommend those things.
Those things. Okay, yeah, I'm not familiar with any of those things. Mm-hmm. I'll put them on the list. Roy, did you say you're a guest?
Yeah, I did, John.
I can't remember. Like
the second award in a row.
Okay. I just put Wallace Shawn because he's 47 years old.
He would have made a great external recurring character, John. Just for Star Trek. Have we watched any other Wallace Shawn movies? I don't know if we have.
We should watch My Dinner with Andre somehow.
Oh.
Songs about movies about dinners, maybe? With Andre?
Okay. One-room movies. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Mickey, best external recurring character. That's, someone that's been on another podcast, an actor or something.
I'm going to say Lindsay Duncan because she's been in, like, everything. She was the mother who was basically high on blues for the entire thing. But she also played two characters in Mansfield Park. I don't know if you noticed. She played Mrs. Price, the downtrodden poor Portsmouth fishwife. And she also played the Thomas richer Jr. version of Edmund's mother, the one who was off her face on blues all the time.
She got range.
Really? Wow.
Oh, yes. Okay.
There you go. She played two characters in Mansfield Park. And she's been in everything, including Rome. Once again, the HBO, excellent HBO series, Rome.
It all comes back to Rome. Okay, so that's an internal recurring character then, if she's in the same ones in this set, right?
Oh, no.
That's fine.
She must have been in something.
I am going to find something that you guys have done that she's definitely in.
Oh, okay. I'm sure she has, yeah. That's totally fine. Okay, let's just say them both right now. We may as well do that. Roy, who is your internal recurring character and your external recurring character?
So external, I had it blank, and I didn't realize that until 10 seconds ago, so I'm just going to go with Sally Hawkins, who we saw in Paddington 2.
Paddington 2, okay.
Yeah, and there's probably more, but that's the one I can remember, especially Clueless. There's got to be some recurring from Clueless. But internal recurring character, I have so many honorable mentions, and I don't want to steal them from people. So after everyone's given theirs, then I'll fill in my honorable mentions. But my winner is Dad coming home in the middle of a rager, both in Clueless and in Mansfield Park.
Oh, wow. That's good internal.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, Phil, your recurring characters.
A theatrical production, not under my roof. my favorite internal recurring character was the anti-Phil male. So it lives... You know, I was 15 when Clueless came out, like I said, and like every one of these had someone I would have loathed and hated. Henry Crawford.
Okay.
Come on. Who likes that guy?
Yeah.
Or the D-bag in Clueless who sexually assaults
Elton.
This is still Elton.
Yeah, Elton.
Elton.
Elton's the worst. He's the worst.
Yeah. Those kind of guys who I just did not get on with when I was 15.
Yeah.
Okay. And my external recurring character. I know John's getting a little bit confused now, so I've decided to take it easy on him, and I haven't got one, and it's to make it easier for John and not because I couldn't think of one.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm going to say really quickly, my external recurring character is Hugh Bonneville from Mansfield Park, because it was so funny because we just barely saw him in Paddington 2.
That's right.
He was kind of dumb in Paddington 2, but in this one he gets to just have that really, really dumb face. In Mansfield Park. And so, yeah, so it's like, I know him from Downton Abbey, and he just keeps getting dumber in everything I see him in. And it's great. And then honorable mention to Alice Kriege in Persuasion, who is the Borg queen in Star Trek First Contact.
Yes.
And he's in the OA as well.
Okay, and then my internal recurring character is Sally Hawkins impersonating the Fanny Bryce poster for Mansfield Park in the opening seconds of Persuasion. She has the exact same pose and looking at the camera the exact same way. Yeah.
That's so true.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Mickey, did you have any more recurrings?
So my internal recurring character is love that is gained through a tortuous channel. So love that's always there or always been there, but gets there in the end. Takes some time.
Oh, such a girl.
Yeah.
Also, so, have you guys done Phantom Menace?
We haven't.
No. We've only done two Star Wars movies.
Yeah, we did.
How are you going to try this in?
Well, cause that would validate Lindsay Duncan. Oh, that's okay. The only film that I can imagine you guys have done. But yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
So some of the honorable mentions for recurring has got to be Cousin Love.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
We've got Staring Straight at the Audience.
Yes.
In Persuasion of Mansfield Park, there's costume designers that bleed over to both, and that's kind of boring, but there it is.
Yeah.
Can I also say the evil relative who only does things for the sake of getting their fortune?
Yep.
Yes.
So was that the deal with Mrs. Norris? Was she getting money for that or something?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Mrs. Norris definitely was quite poor, but living off the Bertrams. Hmm.
Okay. Roy, best death, speaking of Mrs. Norris.
Yeah, this has got to be it, right? So yeah. It's when Mr. Norris drops face down into his oatmeal and Mrs. Norris just rings the bell, right?
Yes, that's mine. Yeah, totally. Did anybody have a different death?
Yes.
Okay.
I had Mariah's respectability when she shacked up with Henry Crawford.
Yikes.
I was frantically researching this, and I think in the book, Mrs. Norris's husband dies before the action begins.
Of course. Yeah, no, he does.
So I was going to say for... No, before the action.
No, but in the film, he dies at the table.
Yeah, but in the book, he doesn't, right?
Yeah.
So in the book version of Mr. Norris, who has the good sense to die before the start of Mansfield Park.
Nice.
The good sense. Fair enough.
Not to involve himself in that shower.
Best villain.
Or most base deceiver.
Oh, sorry, yes. most base deceiver. Yeah.
I have gone for Mary Crawford.
Ooh.
Because she showed her true colors right at the end when she was essentially planning Tom's death.
Yeah.
When he dies and Edmund, you get all the money and we get married, then I'll get all your money. How's that?
Doesn't she look? She looks like she's being so clever. She thinks she's being so clever.
Her downfall is delicious. Yes. Yeah. She is my favorite villain.
I'm Mary Crawford, and welcome to my TED Talk. Yeah. Okay, no, that's a good one. That's a good villain. Okay, Phil?
Well, I've gone Henry Crawford.
Aha.
But I think everyone else didn't mind him as much as I did, so I'm a bit embarrassed now. But no, he's twitching my D-bag radar. Didn't like him. Too smooth.
Yeah.
Too smooth by half.
Yeah, I mean, he twitched my D-bag radar, but also I related to him, so I'm so torn. okay, Roy, villain.
Well, honorable mention to the Cobb, right?
Yeah, the Cobb.
I gotta go with Sir Thomas Bertram.
Hero or villain, though?
Sir Thomas Bertram, who makes his fortune off of slaves and then gives it up in order to do tobacco instead, but also like constantly making sexy comments towards his niece Fanny. Yeah. Gross.
Okay, yeah, that's a bad guy.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Or a big charlatan, I suppose. okay, my villain, charlatan, bad person is just 4 feet off the ground. Just because that's the distance that causes someone's, a lovely young girl's face to get just completely mashed and destroyed.
Yep.
okay. Roy, best hero. Gentleman? Perfect gentleman. Best perfect lady. Gentleman lady. /
Okay. It's for me, it's Anne Elliot, because I'm so happy that through her long suffering, she finally gets what she wants. But also, she sets a collarbone. Like, she snaps that collarbone right back into place. That was pretty impressive.
I have to it was pretty impressive, but also that was the most gingerly snapping back of a collarbone I've ever seen. It was like breaking also, a wishbone. Just
Do collarbones really do that?
Does your collarbone dislocate? I don't know.
Not very often. Yeah. I'm going to say it normally breaks before it dislocates.
I've broken both of mine. It's fun.
Yeah.
I think she might have like pushed on a broken collarbone, which I can imagine was pretty painful. But at least she was trying. She was doing her best. You know, a lot of people might get that wrong too without an X-ray.
It didn't look like it took too much effort. It was an avian collarbone. The little boy has some kind of small bone disease, or toy bones or something. Because it was just
toy.
It looked like she was just fitting a piece into a puzzle. It was just like plunk. Yeah.
Anyway, she saved his life because he would have died from that collarbone dislocation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've gone for Paul Rudd / Josh.
Okay.
Because, you know, they're not blood-related, at least. And I feel bad for choosing him because, you know, obviously Jane Austen, very important writer. Some would argue a feminist writer, some not so much, but lots of interesting female characters. But speaking from the male perspective, I said, it's that the men in this are just almost universally horrible or at least severely flawed. And he's just quite nice, isn't he?
He is quite nice.
He doesn't
nice.
Do anything wrong particularly.
Quite fancied him.
He does, yeah, and he looks the same now.
Yeah.
And
he's
yeah, we were saying the other day, weren't we, with some friends, Paul, we were trying to think of celebrity men who haven't disgraced themselves, and Paul Rudd is one of the ones we came up with, as far as I know.
Yeah, that's going to be a really sad day, don't you think?
The sex dwarf pictures come out.
Yeah, that's going to be really too bad. Okay, Roy, hero, or gentleman, lady, perfect?
Yeah, I already most. Did it.
You did? Okay, yeah. Mickey, did you do yours?
I didn't, but I also chose Anne Elliot because I think she's just so capable. She rises to every challenge and deals with every drama very calmly and sensibly. I think she's brilliant.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Captain Wentworth notices it too. He says there is no one more capable than Anne.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Lord love. Her name's not Fanny.
Oh. Yeah. That too. That.
I was just going to say honorable mention for Fanny Price because she also, you know, just deals with stuff because she has to.
Maybe this is the time to talk about, because we have like three different love stories here with the women, right? And and in Clueless, she kind of grows up a little bit and she gets her happy ending with the guy that you know, anyway. And then in Persuasion, you know, she missed her chance, but she gets a second chance and it's lovely and it's a wonderful story. But I think in Mansfield Park, I think she deals with the most and I think she overcomes the most of these characters.
Mm. I mean, she was basically ditched by her family, wasn't she, when she was a child, which you can imagine.
Treated
is pretty
by her adoptive family.
Pretty harsh, and then treated badly by her adoptive family, exactly.
Yeah, but if you persevere and if you make the right choices, you can marry your cousin.
You can. If you work hard, you can marry your cousin. Otherwise, there's something also about like Mansfield Park that it's like, okay, she was punished by living with her crappy family, but then she got privilege and prestige. But then there's like, this is something else that's kind of something that I think young women go through when they're persuaded by family members. Like, oh, this person is nice and he will provide and you're wrong for denying him. She gets punished for denying Crawford. They're like, okay, since you don't feel this way, since you don't have the love, since it's not right for you, you have to go back and live in the rat's nest.
Yes, definitely. That was the misogyny that I spotted.
Yeah. And it's kind of, I guess it's kind of this, a similar thing to like when Cher declined, what's his name, Elton's advances. That was it was another thing. It's like, okay, well, then you need to get mugged.
Yeah.
You know, because like I'm a good guy and I like you, and so now you need to get mugged, or at least not a ride home. Okay, so my hero is Christian, and I've always it's like one of those things where, because in the scene with the mall when, and you know, maybe it's not, maybe Ty wasn't in any danger, but Ty was flirting with those two guys and they dangled her off the balcony, and then Christian you know, immediately kind of proactively rushed over there and saved her and then, you know, did all this thing. And it's kind of interesting because, like, usually a guy is a hero, you know, when he wants to impress a girl. And he's in a situation where, you know, as a gay man, he's like, yeah, I guess he's the gay best friend and they're there for each other and everything. Uh-huh. But also he wasn't trying to, like, romantically impress anybody because the only other people in the scene would be his potential romantic partners, if that makes any sense. And so it's pretty much he's just, like, putting his whole self on the line. He's like, no, this is wrong. I'm going to solve this problem. And it's almost like the only character in the movie who's not, you know, thinking romance at the time he's doing something heroic.
Yeah.
So.
And he was quite hard, wasn't he? He was
He was serious about
he
it.
He was, yeah.
Okay. Roy, best goof.
Sure. So, it's weird because I don't think the filmmakers knew so they had Louisa jump nowhere near Captain Wentworth, who didn't make an effort to catch her. And so I think that was poor filmmaking.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It was almost as if they didn't get coverage, and then they just kind of
She jumped behind him, like 10 feet behind him.
So, catch me!
Catch me, what? Where?
Phil, goof.
Goof, making Mansfield Park.
Whoa, oh, shade coming.
These are ironical words, and it's going to be his number one.
Mickey, goof.
The clueless driving scenes. Oh my god, they were terrible. You know, they properly looked like they were in a pretend car on a green screen.
Looking at each other for like 10 seconds at a time instead of the road.
Terrible.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's one of my honorable mentions at the very beginning of Clueless, and I had my phone camera out to get a shot of this. Dion gets into Cher's car. And Dion has a nose ring, and then in the next shot, Dion does not have a nose ring.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. I have evidence of this. Also, when Cher calls Josh in Sun Valley, and she's like, Josh, I was mugged, come help me. And he's like, you owe me one. And then he hangs up the phone. Like, where is she? She's just generally in Sun Valley?
True.
Well, that Hertz rental place did feature fairly...
The Hertz rental place. That's the only place they go past.
They drove past that on more than one occasion.
Oh, dang. I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Okay, my other honorable mention. Sorry about this. This is a big goof. This is a big goof situation. Jane Austen, she just, like, sloppy writing, I guess, because her movies are filled with goofs. In Mansfield Park, all the men's sideburns are perfect triangle shaped.
Oh, right. But like set squares.
Yeah. But then in Persuasion, all the guys' sideburns are long rectangular shapes down to their chin. So which is it? What did men have? Did they have triangles
or was it a different time?
Rectangles.
Was it set at different times?
Persuasion was
done posthumously, wasn't it? She was, I'm pretty sure Mansfield Park was before Persuasion.
Yes, it was.
There should be only one set of Austen sideburns. That's my stance.
All I know
that's
is when we went to the Jane Austen house in Bath many years ago, and they have a guy in full Austen period getup on the door, and he is the biggest mutton chops you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And as we went in, he complimented me on my sideburns, which were the long rectangular variety. So I'm taking that as canon.
A William Elliot style sideburn.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so the biggest goof, though, is... Oh, by the way, I didn't get BritBox to watch Persuasion because I found the DVD in the local library. I saw that the DVD was in my local library. I walked over to the library. I looked over in the movie section, and it's the old Kieran Hines version of Persuasion. I'm like, oh, no. You know? And so I'm like, oh, okay, crap. You know, maybe they have the different DVD. But then I found the Persuasion that we watched in the television section, Roy. Persuasion's not a movie. It was a TV show.
the Kieran Hines version is lovely. It's a lovely movie.
Well, that's the one we should have watched, because this was a TV show. This doesn't count. Nothing about Persuasion counts.
It's a TV movie. It was not split up into parts across several nights. It was a movie.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
All right. That's right. We decided that was fine. Okay. Best LOL moment, Mickey.
I thought it was pretty amusing when they accidentally got onto the freeway in Clueless.
Yep. Okay, that was mine too. Merging on.
And
the
they had that big truck going par par behind them.
And it was so traumatic they had to have sex afterward.
Yeah, I found that very amusing.
Nice. Okay, Phil.
Just like with the fanny stuff, I'm so juvenile sometimes in my sense of humor. I like the line about my yoga teacher doesn't want me to take part in any activities where balls are coming at my face. Yeah. There goes your private life.
There goes your social life, yeah.
Social.
That's it. okay. My LOL is when Giles from Buffy the Vampire Slayer is they say, okay, this is going to be who's at your house. Well, he's an admiral, and he just turns around in frustration suddenly, like, ah, an admiral. He suddenly turns into Khan, like, admiral. Yeah. Okay.
That's high standards, isn't it? If an admiral's not good enough for you.
I know. Yeah. He hates all admirals. Roy, you said yours already, right? It was the same?
Merging out of the freeway,
merging
yeah.
Merging out of the freeway, okay. All right, now, new category, everybody. We're christening a new award just to make, you know, in our ongoing goal to make it 2-hour award segment of the podcast. Roy, what is your key of D minor moment, or else the saddest of all these moments? Yes.
Yeah. It's when Fanny turns on Mr. Crawford and subsequently gets kicked out of her Mansfield Park and sent back to her hovel home.
She's sent back to the hovel home. That was sad. Okay. Weep instantly. Okay.
I wept instantly.
Yeah. All right. Phil, saddest moment.
Saddest moment.
When you started watching Mansfield Park.
Yeah. Oh, and 212 minutes thereafter, whatever it was. I would say... probably the bit in Persuasion. It could be Mansfield Park. I get that mixed up. No, it's Persuasion. Where she is waiting for Wentworth at the sort of appointed hour. And they're going to finally have the exploration and declaration of their feelings. But then everyone else turns up and kind of gets lost. And so I could relate to that. You know, I've been there. Mm-hmm. The moment where you think you're going to make your move, but then all of a sudden the time isn't right and there's other people there and you get scared and it all falls apart.
Yes. Okay. That's sad. Okay. Mickey.
I think in Mansfield Park, where a 10-year-old is ditched by her family and left to stand outside for 2 hours in the early hours of the morning and nobody's there to collect her. And then when somebody does arrive, they're horrible and they don't really want her anyway. And she's like, nobody loves me, nobody wants me. I thought that was pretty sad.
Oh, yeah. No, that was... I forgot about that part. Yeah, when she's...
As pediatrician, I would have been on the phone to social services right there and then.
Yeah, or on the take a letter, you know, get a quill out.
A strongly worded letter to Child and Family Services, yes.
Yeah. All right, my key of D minor moment is when we learn Cher doesn't have a mother... because she died in a routine liposuction accident, which is really funny, and we all laugh, but, like, stop to think for just a moment about how intensely sad that would be.
Yeah.
It's just a routine thing, and she just died. She's dead. She's dead. Mickey, what the heck moment?
I think either the fall... the fall that was not a fall.
Yes.
Or the weird just random walking along the cob with like half the sea being thrown at you and almost not noticing it / mentioning it. Like, why didn't they even say, oh, it's getting a bit wet here, isn't it? Let's go home. They just withstood it like manly navy men.
Should we go to the cob again, sir? Yes. But it rains so terribly. Yes, but we're men, so we must go to the cob.
Also, there were 10 feet waves crashing over us, and we pretended not to notice.
It's the only place we can go to talk about our feelings. Yes. The waves cover the sounds of our emotions.
Yeah, that one.
Okay, Phil?
Yeah, we've talked it to death now, but it's the cob dive. It's just how random it is. Just how quickly it happens. You're like, okay, I'm gonna jump off now, bye. Splat.
Yes. It was so definite, is for sure.
Give him a bit of warning.
Yeah.
Roy.
So honorable mention to Captain Wentworth, shocked to realize that he's engaged. But I'm going to give the winner to Anne and Captain Wentworth's kiss. That was a shocking moment.
Oh, okay. Very good. Okay. Okay. Obviously the Cobb fall is the big winner. But I just have to mention a couple other things. Of course, the Mansfield Park slave book, slave pictures.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, what's true. Going that's on?
That's not a great coffee table book.
Yeah, it's like, who did he commission to draw those? Yeah.
So my impression was it was supposed to be Tom Jr.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Tom Jr. Like, drew those while he was there.
Yeah, those are his drawings, yeah. Yeah, he's, like, really perfected some... Like, that's how he perfected his drawing style. It's just, like, drawing every atrocious slave thing he could see, and that's how he became a good artist.
Mm-hmm.
Josh's... Josh's support and appraisal of Marky Mark, like inexplicable, like defense of Marky Mark and his Marky Mark's planting of trees or something. He says it several times. Like maybe Marky Mark wants to make a difference. But I think the weirdest thing, I'm going to go ahead and say this here, that I don't understand is Josh and Mel, his name's Mel, right? Cher's father. Josh and Mel's relationship, where Mel has the weird line at the beginning, you divorce wives, not children. And so for that reason, like Josh is still his child, even though he was just married to like Josh's mom for just like, you know, a couple months. And it's like, no, he's my son now. And then Josh actually says, just because my mom marries someone else doesn't mean he's my father, you know? And so, kind of saying it's like, oh, no, Cher's father is my father, and my mom's current father is less my father than Cher's father. And so they have some weird father-son thing going down. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I think it was just the film just wanted to say, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause so,
don't worry about it. There's a reason he's here, but it's not because he's blood, so don't worry about
it. Exactly, because Mr. Knightley was a strong part of the family, but not... not related by blood. He was married. Mr. Knightley's brother was married to Emma's sister. Is that right?
You always got to bring it down by talking about the boring books again. So the fun film.
I'm pretty sure that Mr. Knightley is Emma's brother-in-law.
Mm.
So something along those lines. So like,
don't look at me.
They're family, but they're not family.
In-law relationships.
He's always been in her life from a very young age, so he's known her since she was really small.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Exactly.
So it's still creepy.
So it's still creepy, but there's no blood relatives there. I think that's what they're trying to
creepy
do.
Creepy but legal. Yeah. That's what they should have called.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Roy, best scene.
When Christian comes over for movie night.
Oh,
that's my favorite scene.
That's great. Okay. Yeah. Sporadicus. The Sporadicus scene. Okay. Phil, scene.
Scene is when she goes back to Portsmouth to rough it. And I was immediately leaning forward in my seat thinking, hooray, we're free of this sort of cosseted, lardy-dal, 1% aristocratic nonsense.
Yeah.
That's a word they'd have to say in these films. They always say nonsense. And thought, we're going to get some nice gritty urban kitchen sink drama with real people who I can relate to for about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Are we going to do quote?
Eventually.
We're doing quote soon.
Okay, I'll so scene, I think, even though there's a dodgy kissing scene, the ending to Persuasion, it's just so romantic. I just
It's like
cry.
They couldn't find each other's mouths, like they didn't.
There's just, I think it's just the emotion, it's so strong.
I forget where mouths are when I get very emotional.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's so beautiful. That end scene, I just love it.
Oh,
it's,
good.
You know, the culmination of 8 years of
waiting and hoping.
Waiting and hoping, yeah. And despair and joy and everything. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Love it.
I'm going to get literary at the end of The Count of Monte Cristo from Dumas. The last line is, the two best words in the English language are wait and hope.
Yes.
Oh. Okay. I don't know. Okay, so you said your scene. Okay, my scene is really quick honorable mention to the ball in Mansfield Park where they're dancing in slow motion.
Is that where they're just kind of walking around the room?
No, that's
Persuasion. In Persuasion. Oh, yeah, that's a pump room. I just
they're
learned
just,
about that.
They're just doing laps around that
yeah,
salon.
Which apparently is like they mention it. They say this is the pump room where everybody just does laps and looks at each other. Apparently that's a thing you do when there's no music to dance to.
Nothing to do in those days.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Mansfield Park Ball, I like that. But the Run Lola Run scene at the end of Persuasion where she has to save Manny or whatever, and she's doing Run Lola Run at the end of the movie.
It's almost like Gallipoli, isn't it? You know, the film Gallipoli. I mean, spoilers if you haven't seen it.
I'm not sure what it is. Yeah, really. Gallipoli. That's the World War One movie, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I can't really tell you then.
It's also a bit like the end of 1917, which is also
spoilers.
A World War I movie.
Yes.
Where he's running along.
The running, desperate running.
Yeah. Okay.
Or any Mission Impossible movie where Tom Cruise is running for 30 solid minutes. Anyway.
It's that.
Before it's come.
Okay. Roy, best actor.
Sure. Alessandro Nivola as Henry Crawford from Mansfield Park.
Okay. Phil, best actor.
What a rogue. What a rake.
Sally Hawkins.
She's
very good. Despite all my harsh words for these films, I thought she was very good.
That's the correct answer. It's not my answer, but it's a correct answer. Mickey?
I went Frances O'Connor.
Yeah.
I thought she was really good.
Yeah.
She was good too, yeah.
Striking.
Yeah,
yeah she yeah. had it. It was all in the eyes. It was good. I went with 50-year-old Paul Rudd, who went back in time and made Clueless. And he, like, totally pulls it off as a college freshman. Okay. Mickey, best... Okay, do you have any questions that we haven't answered yet?
I want to know what happened to Mariah. Like, there was lots of talk about her marrying Henry, wasn't there?
But it didn't happen.
But she was already married to Mr. Rushworth.
Yeah.
So did she get a divorce? What happened to her? How was she available to marry Henry?
Well, no, she didn't marry Henry. Henry just left with Mary, and they went to be with their disgusting, filthy friends, right, who probably put on plays all the time. But I think there was definitely a divorce, and I think Mariah is probably back at home where they've locked her in the attic or something.
For being a bad girl. From Clueless, what does having a Twin Peaks experience mean?
Yes.
Oh.
So this is I can't remember the context. You guys have seen Twin Peaks, haven't you?
We know our Twin Peaks pretty well. I couldn't.
Yeah, we have seen Twin Peaks, but
I think she's just talking about her best friend was murdered.
Twin Peaks experience.
And no one knows who did it.
Yeah, no one knows who killed her best friend Laura.
I have no idea.
I remember that line, and I didn't think of it at the time. I mean, it wasn't forefront on my mind, but I remember thinking in my head, "Oh, I don't get that joke that they're saying."
But it sounded like it would have been a brilliant joke.
It was between someone vomiting in the pool and them being in the car with a Black Beret woman.
Maybe just surreal? I don't know.
Yeah, just like,
yeah,
this is
maybe
weird.
Just surreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, no, that's a good one. Okay, any other questions?
Nope.
All right, Phil, questions?
Nope.
Oh, no. Okay.
So, can you please explain to me why Mariah, who wanted to be with Henry Crawford, her attraction to Henry Crawford caused her to want to get married immediately to Mr. Rushworth. I don't understand what the objective was.
I thought it was a bit weird. I kind of took it that she was attracted to him and she knew he was a bad guy. And so she just wanted to get married and out of there because she knew she would just like be, you know, like she knew she would like, she knew she would, it would be whatever happened, what eventually happened, which is like she'd have an affair with him rather than marry him.
Oh. He's a good affair guy, but not a great husband.
Yes. Yes. That's kind of what I got, but I don't think it was like set out right. And I was a little bit confused too, because, you know, I kind of got the, cause she was flirting with him, but then I also got the impression that she hated him. But then she went back to him. And so I think there was something.
I thought maybe she was trying to provoke a jealous response from him. Maybe she perceived that he liked her crummy, filthy cousin Fanny Price.
I think, Orson Scott Card needs to write Fanny's shadow, so we get it from her perspective.
Okay. All right. Well, John, what are your questions?
Okay, my questions are: how do you strike it rich as captain in the Navy?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. Like all these people come back from the war; they made their money in the war. I don't know what that means.
It wasn't ethical. That's all I can tell you.
No, exactly. Yeah. I think it was through, like the Vikings, how they got rich. I think it was a bit of like they got paid, didn't they, for being in the Navy and whatnot.
Yeah,
if
it was a big enough war, you know, then the government supplies you're using.
But if everyone became filthy rich from the war, then armies and navies would be enormous because everyone would want to join. I don't know.
But I think he was a captain, wasn't he? So he was enough of a gentleman that he was higher up in the ranks.
Oh. Well, here's my theory. He was a captain, and they found sunken treasure, like, on a mission.
Ooh.
And so that whole ship got rich. Yeah.
That's the film I want to see.
Yeah. So, by the way, Joe, speaking of being in the Navy and being on a ship, the Kieran Hines version has a wonderful final shot. That's not broached at all in this movie. So it's worth going back and watching.
Okay, I'll check it out. I actually got that from the library, too. Maybe I'll watch it this weekend.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Okay, also my other question is, Cher marked too many things that have the September 3rd call, and how did that screw up the whole case?
I
didn't follow that.
He was just being melodramatic, wasn't he? He was obviously really tired. Yeah. He'd spent like a few days doing the same thing.
His suspenders were very tight.
Yeah.
He was just like, now we have to look through all of the notes again for a different date to the one that you've marked. So like, I can imagine like if you've gone through whatever, 100 sets of papers and marked out one particular date, and then you have to go through another 100 set of papers and mark out a different date. That must be annoying.
What a nightmare.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah,
but
I think he
was being melodramatic because he was just tired.
Yep. Yeah, I really don't understand like what the case even was. I guess they don't have to say. All I know is, it's just like the dates got mixed. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
Okie dokie. Okay, those are my questions. Okay, Mickey, what's your favorite part? What was your favorite quote?
Oh, my favorite quote was, I've got two. My favorite quote was, it is one thing to spark up a doobie and get laced at parties, but another to be fried all day.
I wonder why you find that so relevant.
Also, Cher's saving herself for Luke Perry. Well, you've seen how picky I am with my shoes, and they only go on my feet.
Oh, that's good.
Those are my two favorite quotes.
Okay, Phil quotes?
Both from Clueless, obviously.
Phil, I think if I could take my current sensibility and transplant it into my younger self, then I would have got this printed on a T-shirt and worn it with pride. You're a virgin, or I'm a virgin who can't drive.
That's
such a good insult.
That was accurate for a number of years for me.
All right. Roy, quote.
So honorable mention for Mansfield Park when Edmund and Fanny are having a fight. And he says, "You're being irrational." And her response is, "Another adornment. I must be ravishing." So I thought that was a really clever retort.
Yeah,
but
nice.
My favorite is in Persuasion when the family has kind of reconvened in Bath. And Mary is with them. And Giles, when he notices that Mary has entered the room, he goes, "Good heavens, it's Mary," right? Like, not, "I'm so happy to see my daughter." It's just like... Oh, anyway, it's great.
Shoot, I have three lines that I have to mention. From Mansfield Park, so one from each movie. From Mansfield Park, I like when someone asks Fanny, "Have you changed your mind?" And she says, "Yes, several times, you know, regarding marrying that guy." And then in Clueless, during one of Cher's, like, debate retorts, she says, "As long as there's violence in the news, there's no need to take it out of any form, it, like the films that need it for entertainment value." I like that line. And then in Persuasion, when someone asks, "And Mrs. Elliot?" "Dead. Quite dead." That was the status of Mrs. Elliot.
Poor Mrs. Elliot.
Yeah. Okay, Roy, let's get these taglines down. First of all, I think there was only one tagline that
wins.
Yes,
I agree.
Yeah. And that's "Sex, clothes, popularity, is there a problem here?" from Clueless.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Agreed.
Yep.
So that wins.
All right, so we all agree with that. Okay, Roy, let's do your alternate taglines for these three movies.
Sure. For Clueless, "They're the top 1% kids in America." Mansfield Park, "Good girls love roguish rakes." Persuasion, "For you alone, this movie was planned and produced. Have you not seen this?"
Okay, cool. Phil?
Okay, Persuasion is, "This year, if you go to the Cobb, you'll be courting disaster."
Oh,
nice.
Man, the trailer voice.
That's
cool. Clueless is from my pal Asher, who I used to work with. We often at work used to just sit reminiscing about the 90s, and we'd always end up just saying, "It was a simpler time, a better time."
Nice.
And my Mansfield Park one is not so much a tagline as it's a meme. So you know, like the Drake meme where he doesn't like something and then he likes something.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So normally, but it's like one thing he doesn't like and then one thing he likes. But in my version, it's three cells. So the first two, it's like having sex with your cousin. No, Drake doesn't like. Having sex with a priest. No, Drake doesn't like. Having sex with a priest who's your cousin, Drake likes.
Oh, that's too brilliant. Okay, Mickey, taglines.
Okay, Persuasion. "If only she'd said yes 8 years ago."
Mm-hmm.
Dot, dot, dot. Mansfield Park. "When your cousin looks like Johnny Lee Miller, consanguinity is just a long word." Clueless. "When you're rich and pretty, you can be mean and get your man."
Nice.
So he managed.
A lot of cousin stuff. Oh, you guys, you're adorable. Okay. Clueless. My Clueless tagline. "Sometimes individual rational self-interest eventually makes everyone happy, I guess." And then for Mansfield Park, "Sometimes doing the right thing is spurning another right thing." And then for Persuasion, "Sometimes to work..." I can't read this. "Sometimes it's worse lake good advice now grows..." I can't read this at all.
Oh my gosh. John.
"Sometimes worse advice is later is..." okay. "Sometimes good advice now grows to worse advice later." That's what it is.
Oh my goodness, John.
"Sometimes good advice now grows to worse advice later." Okay.
Do we need to call someone?
I'm not.
No. It's like
John's having a stroke.
Here's the thing. I was more on drugs at the beginning of this, and now I'm just returning to my normal self, so I don't know what that says. Okay. Titular line, everybody. I'm going to start with my titular line before I fall over. My titular line is, and actually, Mickey, I think you said it earlier, it's a weak spirit always is always open to persuasion, can never be relied upon. So that's persuasion. A weak spirit always open to persuasion can never be relied upon. All right. Mickey, do you have a titular line?
I do not have a different one. That is exactly what I chose.
Okay, sorry, I stole it. Phil?
That's fine.
I do have another one, and it's, I think this is a good realization that more people in the world in this day and age should have. It's from Clueless towards the end, where she thinks to herself, everything I think and everything I do is wrong. I was wrong about Elton, I was wrong about Christian, and now Josh hates me. It all boiled down to one inevitable conclusion. I was just totally clueless. Nice. I think a lot of what's wrong with the world these days is no one can just say, yeah, do you know what? I was wrong. Everyone has to double down on everything and try to twist the world to agree with their preconceptions. And it's good to just realize, do you know what? I was wrong, and I'm going to change my opinions.
And she really is a ditz with a credit card.
And she, well, that's what Mickey thinks.
How lovely of a world would it be if people could just like constantly and frequently say that they were wrong, right? Anyway, that was also my titular line, but I did like from Mansfield Park when she was dropped off at the house and she's just like, hey, is this the Mansfield Park? And they're like, yeah, this is the Mansfield Park. Can I come into the Mansfield Park? No, wait outside in front of the Mansfield Park for a while. That was pretty good.
That's cool, a Mansfield funny. Park, baby.
That's a Mansfield Park, baby.
Okay, let's get a few special awards here. Let's see, the most needlessly unspoken love declaration. I kind of treated this as not like their love is obvious, but why is this so, why did they not say anything? Yeah. So, okay, so who should have, who was most obviously didn't say anything when they should have?
Well, it's Mansfield Park and the cousins because they're cousins, so it's obvious that there's hot romance.
I picked Mansfield Park cousins not because because there were people asked them, hey, do you like each other? And like they had an in, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I picked Fanny and Edmund. I think it was so obvious that they were in love with each other. That they just didn't need the "I love you like a man loves a woman."
Right.
Well. I'm the one dissenter then, because I went for Anne Elliot. I mean, because I think, you know, about myself, if I had had a second chance at something I hadn't said 7-8 years ago, whatever it was, I would leap on that. The growing you do in, because you've grown as a person. So you've done a lot of growth and a lot of time to reflect. The idea that you would then start to make the same mistake again by just being all buttoned up and repressed.
And she eventually comes to make that mistake the first time round, though. The mistake was that somebody told her she shouldn't be with him.
Whatever. Russell. The mistake of not,
Lost Lady Russell.
Not pursuing your dream.
Yeah. But she
after
thought he
all
hated
those
her.
Years of regret, you've got to take a chance. So you should have learned a lesson.
I see it.
Yeah. I'd kill for a second chance like that.
Hey!
Well, no, I wouldn't now.
Who are you talking about?
There are times
when I'm so hurt.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, Phil, if you and Mickey didn't get together 7 years earlier, you'd kill for a chance to have the chance with Mickey now.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Brilliant, because it led me here. I have no regrets. Uh-huh. That's on a podcast now, so it's true.
Okay, who deserved the ending the most? Like the Austin ending desertion. Desertion?
Yeah.
Desertion.
Deservement.
I'm saying Cher and Josh.
Oh.
No.
So I feel like that. They just kind of like, well, we sort of like each other and now we like each other. And I think they'll both be happy, I guess. So I went with Fanny, but not Edmund. I don't think Edmund really deserves it, but Fanny sure deserves it.
Yeah. Poor downtrodden Fanny.
Yeah,
I went with Anne and Wentworth guy, right? Because they had 7 years to like brood over their mistake, and so it's like, okay, so now it's the universe owes them to get together.
Yeah,
so.
I feel like they're equal. I think that the 8 years of longing and waiting is, you know, slightly offset by the fact that she did reject him. She was persuaded. Mm-hmm. Whereas poor Fanny, what, you know, she deserved a break mm-hmm. in her crappy life.
Yeah, so, yeah. No, that's true.
I find it hard to, yeah, separate the two. I think they, for me, it's equal. They both deserved it equally. But, you know, yeah, Cher and Josh, I'm not less bothered by them.
Okay. Okay, yeah, let me skip ahead to an award I just made up without telling you guys. Most incesty.
Sir Thomas? Ooh. I don't know.
I'm going, even though it literally isn't incesty, I'm going to have to go with Cher and Josh on this.
I know what you mean. As much as I've said that's my favorite Happy Ever After,
uh-huh.
It is weird. I did get a weird vibe, but I'm trying to fight against it because, like you say, it's the most innocent one, really.
I'm going to go Fanny and Edmund. They are first cousins, and they lived together as brother and sister for quite a long time.
Yeah, it's gotta be
that makes sense. That totally makes sense. Okay. All right, well, best couple and overall. I'm just going to quickly say I'm going to go with Ty and Travis. They're the ones who belong together from the beginning.
Oh, that's cute.
Oh, yeah, me too. That's good. That's so true. I hadn't thought of them.
I didn't think that deep, so I just said Anne and Captain Wentworth.
Okay.
I said Fanny and Edmund because I think they were very well suited in everything. Gene their pool. Interests, their special gene pool, as well as their interests and their temperaments and their characters. There you go. Very Jane Austen words.
Okay. Cool. Okay.
Temperament.
I think that concludes awards, right?
Yep.
I haven't checked the time, but that's got to be a record-breaking awards.
Holy cow, dude, I didn't think we could talk 3 hours about Jane Austen movies, especially since Phil hates every single one of them with his whole heart.
Well, now we get to hear which one he hates the most.
Okay, so I do want to say real quick that our fan poll was very heavily in favor of Clueless, but I also think it's because most of the people on the Facebook page have not seen anything except for Clueless. So
here's the thing, Roy. We should check on this. How often does the fan poll of what people like the most also reflect what the fans voted to watch in the first place?
Yeah.
Which was Clueless.
John, that's your new job.
I will do it right as soon as I wake up today. Okay. You know what? I'm going to ask Roy, I'm going to ask you first this time. What was your third favorite?
I shifted a little bit while we were talking. And I think it might be the best movie, if I'm being honest with myself. But my number three is Mansfield Park.
It is. Okay. Phil, third favorite.
I concur, Mansfield Park.
Mickey?
I concur, Mansfield Park.
Mm-hmm.
Persuasion wasn't even a movie. It was a TV show. And it was filmed with this weird digital camera or something with a lot of pixels and stuff. And there was I love the Run Lola Run sequence, but not because I was emotionally involved. I'm like, why is she running? She's running so much. But I do appreciate Sally Hawkins a lot. So I'm going Persuasion for my number three.
So you voted a number three out of spite because it's not a movie and because I made us watch it?
No, that's why it's number seven out of spite, but it's number three because it was my third favorite.
Okay. All right, John, what's your...
Clueless is number two.
Who's next?
Mickey.
I think Clueless, number two.
Wow. Phil?
Persuasion, number two. Okay, I like Persuasion a lot more after I'd watched Mansfield Park. And, well, do you know, in all the time we've been talking, we still haven't really got into my issues with Jane Austen. It's far too late to start now.
Oh.
But suffice to say, and we were just talking about admitting you were wrong, Mansfield Park and Persuasion, I was kind of going into it thinking, do you know what, I'm going to be wrong. I'm going to trash talk Jane Austen all this time, haven't ever watched it or read it, so what do I know? but they really, in a lot of ways, did completely confirm a lot of my preconceptions, and it was kind of exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Bonnets.
But it was in its content and its form, it was exactly what I was expecting it to be. But Persuasion, in terms of how those things were for me to watch, it was better, that it was more enjoyable to watch or less terrible to watch than I was expecting. So it was, in material terms, what I was expecting, but it turned out watching what I was expecting was better than I expected, if you know what I mean, for Persuasion.
Have you ever had like a coworker who is like, you see him from afar, and this person says a bunch of annoying things and is really, and has like an obnoxious laugh or something like that? And you're like, wow, what an obnoxious person. But
and if
then
you don't know that guy, then the other guy.
Yeah. Like, then you have a conversation with him, you get to know him, and he's actually exactly what you thought he was, but just the act of getting to know him makes you like him more.
So it's a bit like the Three Amigos.
Yes.
Whoa.
So you're friends with Jane Austen.
You're friends.
It's good to hear. Good to hear.
Yeah, exactly. We didn't get on, but then we got to know each other a little bit. Before you know it, we're friends.
Nice.
Okay. Okay, Roy. Big question to you. Second favorite.
Yeah, number two is Clueless, because number one, Persuasion, is just an adorable film. It was absolutely adorable and sweet, and I loved it. But I also thought Clueless was really good. But, you know, number one, Persuasion.
Interesting. Okay, so I think, people really like... Okay, Phil obviously likes Clueless because it wasn't really Jane Austen. But also,
just because it's really good.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's a good teen... I think, and, you know, it's kind of funny. I think it was along... Like, when it came out when we were teenagers, I think it was, like, kind of several years later where someone pointed out, oh, by the way, this is Emma. Like, we didn't know that going in, and so we kind of appreciate it as a teen movie on its own without realizing it was, like, some adaptation.
So everyone were teenagers, were they?
Everyone was. Everyone.
Yes.
In the world.
Everyone in the world were teenagers.
We were all teenagers, weren't we?
Yes.
You weren't a teenager in 95?
Shh. Yes.
Sorry.
No, we all were. Okay, so you know what? I liked Mansfield Park, I think, because I like the sliding doors aspect of Mansfield Park, that, you know, we have a chance. Like, it wasn't – the villain was a villain and he had poor qualities, but then the question is could things be different and should they be different, and what is required of the heroine, and was it right or wrong? And, like, the couldn't-ness of Mansfield Park is an aspect that I really appreciated, so that's why Mansfield Park was my number one.
Yay! We're
kind
of varied responses there. Now we didn't officially get it, but I think that makes Mickey's number one pick Persuasion as well.
Yes. For similar reasons. It's just a lovely
Persuasion
story.
Persuasion 2, Return of the Cobb.
I just find it quite mature. I think it's an older, mature Jane Austen writing about, you know, an older person who has been through life and is on the shelf and destined to be alone forever and gets a second chance. I think it's a lovely story.
Electric Cabanou.
Well, thank you, you two, for talking to us. Now stay on the phone because, you have to. And we're going to introduce future business. So, John, I think Andy is ready if you want to give him a call.
Okay, let's call up Andy. He's joining us next time. And this is Andy's going to be the inaugural – hey, you have to pick three new movies that you haven't seen. So this is three movies that Andy hasn't seen. And in true Andy fashion, he has made it really weird and complicated. And so this is probably going to be a record-breaking length on podcast, but we're doing it. Yeah, we're doing it. It's going to get weird. Okay, we just got Andy on the line. And Andy... What's your plan for your new movies? You have three slots open, and what are we going to do?
Okay, so we let the fans choose one through the Facebook poll.
Mm-hmm.
And that winner is, drumroll, Titanic, right?
Is it still Titanic? Yeah.
They're the winner.
Titanic, yep.
Okay.
Okay. So we're watching Titanic.
Draft? You want to watch Titanic. I know you want to watch Titanic.
I kind of do want to watch Titanic, and I kind of got, I won't say bullied, but goaded into it by some friends and by another podcaster who I very much respect and who might have some interest in talking to us about it. We'll see if that works out. So
possible teaser. We'll see.
Possible teaser. Let's see.
For your second film, John and I are about to do a fantasy football style draft here.
Yeah, okay, great. Of. Let's do it. So explain how you did this again. You both ranked the 15 films I gave you.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm going to say my number one, and John will say his number one. And as soon as we have repeated a movie, then that's it.
That's it. Okay, good. I'm excited for this.
Okay, do you want to start at number one, or we could start at number 15 and then figure out
what... Let's not do that. Let's just not do that.
Yeah.
Fine.
That's not okay. So, John, I'm starting with The Sting. I'm actually dying to watch it.
Okay. The Sting. I don't think we're going to watch The Sting.
Okay.
My number one is John Carter.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
You're the worst. Okay. My number two... And I've seen this, but it's so good, and I feel bad that Andy hasn't, and he should. And so my number two is All About Eve.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. My number two is Pluto Nash.
John, what is wrong
with John? John is picking all the bad movies.
I'm curious about Pluto Nash. Aren't you curious? Tell me you're not curious about it. It was so expensive to make.
That's why it's on my list.
Yeah.
It's like a notoriously terrible movie.
I got to see it. Yeah, no one's talking about Pluto Nash. Everyone's talked about All About Eve.
Okay, well, number three, I'm going with another really great movie that Andy hasn't seen, which surprises me, and we're going to – City Lights is my number three.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And John is about to say, let me see, either Speed Racer or The Rules of the Game.
apparently The Rules of the Game is pretty good from what I hear.
Hammond loves The Rules of the Game.
So, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, this is no fun. Sorry. My number three is City Lights.
Wow. Okay. Hey. No. Oh, that's so exciting. Great. No, I'm very excited about that. So we get to watch a silent film. We never get to do that. And that.
Yeah,
okay. So that's perfect then, because my third is a wild card. Okay. The last time we did my three Andiest movies, I brought you an animated Japanese film. I am bringing you the spiritual sequel to that film.
Whoa.
Called Weathering With You.
Oh.
It is the same director, and it is about star-crossed lovers who, I guess, control the weather in Tokyo or something. I don't know that much about it. But
so not time or bodies, but weather.
But weather, and hopefully less groping of themselves.
Well, I was about to say, as long as there's still plenty of groping. So.
Yeah, no, I think we liked the groping when we talked last time. I don't know. Okay, yeah, so... No,
we were for it.
City Lights, Titanic, and Weathering With You. Boy.
Oh, that's fun.
This is
okay,
different.
I'm just curious, what were your number 15? What were the ones you least wanted to watch?
Okay.
The Rules of the Game was my 15, and John Carter was 14. I had Pluto Nash all the way up at 9.
Oh, see, we almost watched Pluto Nash. I have Lawrence of Arabia at 15. Not because it's a bad movie, but I've seen it before, and it's long.
And it's long. It's really long. Yeah. It's really long. That's the theme of, like, most of these. It's like, oh, I don't know if I have 3 hours to sit down and devote to this.
Okay,
we do. We just spoke about Jane Austen for almost 3.5 hours.
Oh. Talking about Jane Austen is easier than watching Jane Austen in a lot of ways, I think. So,
amen. Hey.
I
said that as a way to be nice. I think there's something to be said about something that impels you to speak about it for longer than the movie actually is.
Yeah.
So. That's my take on it anyway. I'm not a Jane Austen hater that much. Although since I talked about Jane Austen for 3 hours, I'm probably not gonna ever read a Jane Austen now.
There's good news though here, because we watched Clueless and it was delightful, and it's a lovely 90s high school movie, and we are about to do an entire podcast for 90s high school movies for your community service.
That's
I already know my pick. By the way, John, you don't get a pick.
Oh, it'll thank goodness, because I wasn't prepared.
So wait, Facebook, do I get a pick?
You'll get a pick, Facebook poll, and me, and I already know what I'm picking.
Okay, so but we don't pick yet, right? That's
no. We'll throw up a poll this week. Look for a poll for 90s high school movies after John posts the Jane Austen podcast.
Nice. So do I get to nominate movies into the Facebook poll? Okay.
Yeah, cool. Sure.
I'll come
on. And then after that, for our future business, we have no new categories to pick or vote on because Josh Fillmore will be coming on with his never-before-seen movies. So that is our future business.
Future business done. And I think podcast done then.
Podcast done. Well, real quickly, Andy, I don't know if you've met Phil and Mickey. They're lovely.
I listened to your podcast, and I feel like I know you both. I loved your takes on your movies. They're very wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Cool. Yeah. And Phil and Mickey, as you can tell, Andy's the nicest person we've ever known. So it's always great to have all of you around. So thanks, everybody.
Well, I think that's the end of the podcast. Andy, thanks for coming on and getting us excited for next
pump us up.
Go.
Yeah.
And Phil and Mickey, thank you so much. I love that you guys are willing to stay up so late.
Yeah, yeah. It's great to spend time across the pond with you. I feel like I'm across the pond anyway. And it's weird because I'm more tired than you guys are, and I fear that it's like 4 o'clock probably in the morning right now, and I'm really sorry.
1:36.
Okay.
Well, so
not too bad.
We hopefully can make this a at least an annual thing with the two of you.
That's cool. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Love to be on, haven't we?
We'll talk soon and find a way to do it. Oh, one thing we didn't mention. We're going to say this at the very end. Everybody on Earth, if you happen to be listening, July 1st, put it down on your calendars. That's the plan. That's the plan for when we're going to have the real life meetup. If you can make it, great. If not, there's always Skype and there's always Paris. So, okay. You know what? That's yours, mine, and theirs. I'm done talking and I'm going to fall over. I was on drugs today.
Have a good night.
So, Dr. Lasner, is a colonoscopy is a sigmoidoscopy? Are they the same thing?
No, they are not the same thing.
What's the difference?
Colonoscopy goes much further through the large bowel.
Ah, okay.
The sigmoidoscopy just goes to...
Yeah.
Oh, then you have my sympathies. I had the sigmoid, I didn't have the colon.
Oh, yeah. No, the sigmoid one sounds more psychiatric, I would say.
Well, it's,
John, how are the drugs right now?
Uses a firmer probe.
They're wearing off. Katie has a list of funny things I said when I woke up. oh my gosh. Okay. This is going to be bad, you guys, because I'm either talking or I'm not saying anything, and there's no